Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Big Brother Australia podcast. It is week three in the game, and I am joined once again, myself, of course, Taryn Armstrong, joined by Andrew from Australia, back again. How are you doing, Andrew?
Hi. Hello, it's Andrew Licious from Broken Hill. It's a place in Australia.
Yeah, that's how it works, right?
Yeah. It means I'm a threat to win this game. Hello.
So we were introduced to some new characters. We got some intro packages. we had somebody come back, and we had some people leave. I think that's about how it worked.
Yes. Finally, we got to meet Shane. He's a person. He's alive. Mm. And I like him. I like him quite a bit.
Yeah.
Actually, do.
All right. So let's talk about the week here. The first episode that we had this week. Of course, last week, we ended the week with Angela being fake evicted from the game and getting a trip into the bunker, and we kick off this week as she is now down in the bunker, and she gets to hang out there and watch what the house guests are doing. And I will say, I love Angela, but as I the more I watched this, the more I was like, hold on. Angela gets to watch live feeds? I can't even watch live feeds. What is happening here? Why does Angela get to watch live feeds and I don't? What's going on here, Andrew?
It's because you haven't had to deal with the agony of drinking only green tea. The small prices we pay.
Yeah, I've been able to have my English breakfast any day I want.
Yes. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like on the balance of probabilities, what are you willing to like sacrifice, tea or live feed? You know, you can't have like both, you know?
I mean, it's a tough choice. It's a tough one. I gotta say, I felt like they really hyped up this takeover idea that, you know, Angela, she's gonna be in the bunker, she's gonna mess with the other house guests. The execution of it, I felt, was a little awkward, especially like, I felt like at times Angela was trying to bring the energy, trying to give them what they wanted, but it felt a little off to me.
Let's get ready for a takeover.
Yeah, it did feel that like it was, oh wow, like we're doing this again, huh? Like, all right, like let's mess with the house guests then. Let's do it.
Yeah, second time's a charm, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the next, maybe if BB Canada does like a BB takeover, maybe then it won't be a flop. Like, you know, these things work in threes.
Yeah.
But I agree. Yeah. It was a bit, I think the word I used was underwhelming. And I think it was because one, the twist didn't last as long as I thought it would. Because in Big Brother Canada 4, like it didn't last for at least two evictions. Like, so Kelsey was evicted and then Levita was also evicted as well. Here I was like, oh, I thought you guys, Angela was going to be in the bunker for at least one more eviction, but I guess not.
Yeah, she was in there for like a couple of days.
Yeah, like maybe 3 days, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to be there for a whole week, honestly, and like talk to, you know, Ian or whoever the next evictee was going to be. So, but anyway.
Yeah, and so we, you know, we get this sort of the next challenge is that the house guests have to say, or sorry, the housemates have to say yes. Say yes to everything that is asked of them. And they really, again, they hyped it up to be like Angela is going to be in control of this. But like she didn't come up with the tasks or anything. She was just like pointing them in the direction of who the tasks should be given to. And then also, I'm skeptical of even that, to be quite frank, because they had
Marissa? Yeah.
They had an outfit ready to go for Garth, for his butler costume. I do not believe that they had a butler outfit ready to go in everybody's size, just depending on who Angela chose for this task.
Oh goodness. It would have been really funny though if like say like that was like the butler outfit intended for every house guest and poor little Sarah had to wear like this oversized hat.
Right?
Yeah, imagine if like it was like, no, we didn't pre-plan this. Like that outfit has to fit everybody.
I mean, I will say it did not fit perfectly, but it certainly was meant to go on Garth.
Oh, certainly. I will say, though, that when Angela did have her little input, we did get good TV. For example, when she told Matt to go back for not one, not two, but three shades of fake tan. I'm pretty sure the producers didn't intend for him to get three. Mm. And that was 100% an Angela thing of saying, no. I'm not done yet.
Yeah,
that, I need to have my fun.
That one did actually feel like it might have been off the cuff, and it was definitely interesting. It's especially because, like, I think it came from a genuine place of like, no, you missed a spot there. you gotta make sure you cover the whole body.
Oh God, like I felt. I mean. I had mixed feelings about Matt as a character. I personally feel like he's not as likable as, say, a Shane, but I did feel a little sorry for him. Mm. When Angela, okay, this is the quote she had. She said, "Tell him to spread his butt cheeks. I want that bum to be even." I'm like, oh, this poor man. Because he was very orange towards the end. He was like one shade away from being a character. I'm just telling you right now.
Yes, it got bad. It got bad for Matt, and I also like I'm not like an experienced spray tanner or anything. But aren't there like dangerous chemicals, or am I just conflating it with other things?
I mean, it's certainly not Agent Orange, despite the name. but I wouldn't say that it's necessarily good for you. My thing that I notice is that, so this happened in episode 7. He was still very tan in episode 9. So I'm thinking, is he going to look like this, like, if he gets to the end game?
That was my other question. How long do these things last? Can you just, like, shower it off, or is it, like, stuck?
I feel like because they got a professional spray tanner in there, that... It's like a long lasting thing. That is not like your do it yourself at home fake tanner. That was like the professional. We are like splurging. This is going to be on you for a long, long, long time.
Okay. I did a quick Google here. The average spray tan should last around 10 days, it says. But the darker the spray tan, the longer it should last.
I love that with like a Mary on the blockumentary, you're talking about, oh, so like who's the better floater, June or Allie? And like on this podcast, we're Googling spray tan durations.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess like it says a lot about the franchises.
Truly.
10 days, my God, that's like three addiction cycles, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, poor guy. Well, we got to talk about Daniel. Like, so like it opens that the task gets opens up in that they if you say yes to everything, you're gonna get a popcorn chicken feast from KFC. Like you're gonna get a KFC feast. And first thing I noticed was Marissa and Casey were the only people who were not enthused by the KFC thing. Like everybody else is going, yay! And then Marissa and Casey are sitting down on the couch and there's like they exchange a look of ew. But then Daniel, who's one of the most enthusiastic, before he goes into the DR, he's saying to himself, don't be birds, don't be birds.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I mean, that's it tracks. He does not like birds.
Imagine if he opened up that door and in the DR it was like Annalise from BB21 in the chicken outfit. She's like, hey, I don't understand time zones and I'm in Australia now.
Yeah,
I guess morning will come earlier.
That really would have messed him up. But yeah, he goes in and he sees a football,
AFL, yeah. I'm here to help you with those terminologies. AFL.
Okay, can you explain to me? This looks very similar to an American football, but I imagine it looks slightly different.
Well, you know, as a queer immigrant Australian, I am the connoisseur of everything sports. But it is similar AFL, but my understanding, my limited understanding, is that they pick this particular ball because Daniel is like an ex AFL player. Like, it has the logo. Right. It has like, it is like the ball that he would have played with for at least like 5 years of his career. So they were being, I think, especially cruel when they picked this one.
Right. But is it the same as an American football, or is it like a different ball?
I mean, if you want questions on balls answered, you might have to talk to Keith Nail.
But, okay.
But from my understanding, it's similar, but different.
Okay.
When I spent a year in the States, I am by no means an expert on American football, but I do remember the ball shape being different. It was similar, though, like pretty similar.
Yeah, it looked similar, but different. And I feel like, based on the clips that I've seen of the game itself, that the game itself feels like it's similar, but different as well.
I would say we're more brutal, though, because you guys wear like a protective equipment, like these, like shoulder pads and like a helmet. Australians are all, no. You are going to face the football equivalent of a pigeon head on. No equipment, no protection. You are just going to go straight into a concussion, which, oh boy. I personally think you guys have it better in terms of the equipment you guys provide your players.
I never thought somebody would be saying that American football is safe by any means.
Well, we're talking about the land of Australia, where we, you know, for example, yesterday, I literally found a black widow spider in my bedroom. Ooh. And I thought to myself, oh, Americans would be freaked out by this.
Mm.
And I wasn't. And I just thought, oh, my God, I'm not normal. Australia is not normal.
Well, okay.
In but a is good that way. Better? We're just very brave.
Well, like, if I grew up in Australia, would I not be? Because, like, look, I don't like bugs. I don't like spiders. I'm not like the person that like screams and runs away. But I'm the person, if I see one, I'm like, oh God, really? You know what I mean? If I grew up in Australia, would I just not care?
If you grew up in Australia, it's like a trade-off, you know, kind of like live feeds versus tea. Maybe you won't be scared of snakes, but you will be scared of, say, you know,
dogs.
I don't know. Yeah, dogs or scaling fish or shredding cheese.
Or birds, yeah.
That's how it works, right? Or knees. Yeah, you'll be scared of knees, Taryn.
I think that's worse. So I guess I'm good.
Oh, I think Sarah agrees with you.
Yeah.
She agrees with you, Taryn.
Well, okay, so the task here for Daniel, he just has to kick the ball over the wall. Like, all right, guys, you didn't even have it 30 seconds ago, and you're like pining over this ball that you didn't. Come on.
To be fair, this is his career. Like, he's an ex-AFL player, and he's an ex because I'm not sure if you watched Australian Survivor Season 4, but it was like a similar situation where they had an ex-footballer there. These ex-footballers, they're people who wanted to be drafted, but they didn't. And they spent like at least half of their professional lives to this sport. There's a very, I think, sentimental attachment to it. And I kid you not, when I watched the episode, I could have like pinpointed the moment his heart broke in half. It's like, oh, it's like, oh, you want me to kick this? Me, the guy who like was like not good enough at kicking to get drafted, you want me to kick this over the fence? It was so cruel.
It's not like there's even that much space in the yard to play with it, right?
I guess
maybe like toss it back and forth.
I wonder if like the intern like who had to like fetch the ball was like had to like run very far,
right? That was my thought. And, like, every time they do an aerial shot, it looks like it's like in the middle of nowhere or like on a cliff. Or I sort of picture it like it's on a cliff. I don't know why.
Oh my God! Imagine if they kick the ball over the cliff and into the ocean.
Right.
Oh, would not be the craziest thing to ever happen on a Big Brother season.
I think he was trying to pass it to a bird. I think that was what the goal was.
Oh no, not pass it to a bird. He was trying to, you know, aim it at a bird, you know, at a pigeon. No, his arch nemesis.
Yeah.
No, but to confirm your suspicions, yes, the Big Brother Australia house is indeed on a cliff. I actually live like not too far from it. it's in the, like, close to, like, the northern beaches. So it's secluded, and lots of forest. So
I will say, I really like that aesthetic. Like, and I like the overhead shots. Like, this idea that it is...
No fans interfering.
Like, right. Well, yeah, I mean, that for sure. But like also just like this idea that it's isolated and like, you know, just full surrounded by nothing, essentially. And like when they bring in the spray tanner, like you see the trucks are like driving along this long single road, like, you know, like they have to be like, you know, just like they have to like bring people in like it's a haunted mansion or something. I like this aesthetic, especially in comparison to something like Big Brother US, where they're literally just on a lot. And, you know, it's like that's the you know, the most aerial shot we'll ever get of the Big Brother house is like in like the backyard, you know.
And like it's like to the point where people are literally like what hiring banner planes and drones and loudspeakers just to interfere in the game. Meanwhile, Big Brother Australia is saying, okay, well, if we don't need a studio audience, we are literally going to put them in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, there you go.
I guess maybe it makes sense now why there are so many like survivory elements to this particular franchise, up to even the Eviction Room Tribal Council set. They were trying to channel Survivor and the isolated nature of the show.
Yeah. So we also got, we talked about the spray tan. We got the butler thing.
This is the best one.
Do you like the butler one?
Well, if you remember from last week, I'm not exactly the biggest fan of goth. So.
I mean, the Schadenfreude was like, you know, like, okay, we're punishing Garth. But in terms of like, the actual humor of it, I felt like it fell a little flat for me.
Okay, the thing about the Garth thing is that it was less his reactions to it, but more so how the other house guests were using the opportunity that I found really funny. So it was, we can talk about him later, but Xavier was someone that we saw twice in this particular butler montage. So Xavier was the one who jumped in the pool while Garth is cleaning it. And Xavier is also the one who asked Garth to shield me from the rain with a sombrero. Knowing these, like knowing in retrospect that Xavier is like the guy who makes like the big speech in episode 8 about how Garth is a snake.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those details, and then rewatch episode 7 and seeing Xavier say, hey, he's a Mexican hat. I want you to shield me from the rain with it. It just feels a little bit more petty.
It's very true. It's very true.
And I'm sorry, but like, if someone's cleaning the pool, why are you jumping in it? You are only jumping in the pool while someone's cleaning it if you don't like them. That's just a fact.
I could have done without watching the Kieran foot rub.
Oh, yeah. That was a little TMI, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But also, Kieran is just so... Like, one thing I'll note about when he asked for the foot rub is that he said, I'll take a quick foot massage when you're ready. Kieran is... I notice this in all the episodes now. He's very polite. Even when he's like scrambling or he does something bad, he always like says like, if you're okay with that or when you're ready, is that fine with you? He's like, I think that's why I personally like him so much. He means really well. But he's just, it's one of those things where he's playing so like clumsily, but it's like in an endearing way, like when a toddler walks for the first time.
Yeah, he'll go up to Garth and be like, hey, Garth, it's just in case, like, if it's all right to tell you that, you know, Danny did call you a snake, but I hope that was all right that I told you that.
Yeah, I hope it's all right that I told you that. You know, could you give me a foot rub, like, if you're ready? You know, Natalie, can I have your jacket, please? It's like, it's so polite. It's like these outrageous, like, requests or sentences. But he's like, maybe it's like a part of him being 21. He has this, like, lovable demeanor that kind of reminds me of Ovi from BB21. Like, I just want to, like, be friends with him. It's like a vibe he has. And we can talk about his gameplay later, especially in episode 9 when we talk about the 651 vote. But God, Kieran, I love you. Like, I took some time to come around to him, but you know, I'll admit it. This is a safe zone for Kieran fans.
All right. Well, it did look like Kieran might be in trouble here from the strategy portion that we did get in the episode. But that they did pass the task. They got their KFC. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Poor Marissa, though. She didn't want the KFC, but she also had to wear the inflatable cow suit and go moo.
That was my favorite one.
That was so funny because, like, she was so deadpan in the DR when she said, yeah. Yes, I'd love to wear this inflatable cow suit.
I mean, I think in general, like, I feel like Big Brother humiliates its players in the US and clearly here like more often than my taste, and the silly costumes are not like I wouldn't want to wear a silly costume if I want a Big Brother, but occasionally I find a good inflatable cow suit to be pretty funny.
If it was just like a cow onesie or a cow suit, I don't think I would have found it very funny. I would have found it like more like awkward, especially for Marissa, who's, let me repeat it, 61 years old and have to crawl on her knees. But the fact that it's inflatable,
yeah,
that's what got me. So, like, let's keep in mind, there was an intern who had to like pump Marissa up with an air pump or a bicycle pump to like make the outfit go like it was like one of the balloons from Up. It's like that image is the one that I'm like, I want to get the B-roll of like, so who was inflating Marissa's costume?
Yeah.
Oh God. Though, but, and Ian, he was singing like, which is like, I mean, I am sad Ian left because, you know, I wrote in my notes that, oh, Ian's task being that he has to converse only in song is the most like, feels very apropos considering that, oh, if someone loves animals, is very nice and is singing all the time. Oh, Disney princess.
I was surprised. I mean, we'll talk about it, but I was definitely surprised that that this was Ian's episode to go.
Oh, this is like a twist. Like, this is like a, let's be honest, this was 100% rigor mortis. It was rigory. It was like a twist thing. Like, I don't think in a conventional BB season, Ian goes out anywhere close to here. Like, he was insulated. Like, he was very much insulated, like the air inside of Marissa's cow costume. I mean, do you think that Ian is like, was like, do you think Ian would have gone without the twist? I mean,
well, I think I have some thoughts on how this vote went down, but we'll talk about it when we get to the strategy portion. But the first thing that before we get to the strategy, we have to talk about the nomination challenge, aka the HOH competition.
HOH, yeah. Remember, we made a deal. We're going to just call it the HOH.
Yes. And this is a weird one. So they had to, they were in pairs again, and they had to stack, these like little cylinder things on a little, you know, platform. And they both were holding like little handles that controlled one side of the platform. And the weird part about this that I would never have thought of, this was clever. I thought this was very clever that they had like Velcro shoes. And a little Velcro track, so they couldn't like just like slide their feet. They had to actively like pick their feet up, which makes them less stable. Yeah, very clever.
And it feels so BB. Like, it's this challenge, I know, is innovative, but it somehow felt very familiar. Like, mm-hmm. The Velcro foot, like our shoes thing, is very Big Brother. You will never see that on Survivor. I don't think you'll see that on like the challenge. It is like very Big Brother. Yeah. Like, hold your partner's hand while you like navigate this pulley lever thing to stack blocks while you're wearing Velcro shoes. But I commend them, like Karen. Like, for me, this kind of, it felt like a hybrid of like, you know how on Survivor they have that challenge with where you have like the two pulleys and you're trying to get the ball up the snake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it was like a combination of that with like, you know, like a stacking challenge. But the Velcro shoes, I agree, it was very, very good. I would love to see this on Big Brother US or BB Can, personally.
Yeah. So ultimately, we see that Sarah and Zoe are going to win this one slow and steady.
wins the race.
Yeah.
But we should talk about the pairs though, because I do think the pair configuration says a lot about the house.
Right. So, and we saw like, just to talk about the first pair that I want to talk about here. We saw it was, I believe, Matt and Kieran, right?
Well, the interesting thing is like Kieran and Matt are indeed a pair, but so what happened, I had to watch it twice to make sure I had the order correctly. So the first people to pair up instantly were Marissa and Hannah. Like they just look at each other and said, yep, you're my girl. And in retrospect, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Then it was Dan and Ian, which I think also makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Chad and Sophie, Casey and Xavier. And that was like all in like 5 seconds. Then we see Kieran and Matt. And Matt, I think it says a lot about like Matt that like he's like, I think because more than half the house just instantly paired up, that just basically left Zoe, Sarah, Kieran, Matt, Shane, and Garth. And I think, yeah, because Sarah, actually, she's the one who approached Zoe, and Zoe looked very annoyed. And I think that's an interesting thing to keep in mind. I mean, what do you think in that? So if we think about the layout of the house, right, where essentially Sarah is working with Marissa and Hannah, and she's technically supposed to be working with Kieran, but she knows Kieran is the like house pariah. Do you think Sarah did a smart job in approaching Zoe over Kieran, or what would you have done in her position if you were like Sarah and your choices were Zoe, Kieran, Matt, Shane, and Garth?
Well, it's so hard to talk about the optimal strategy, because what I would say is she needs to pair up with somebody who she's aligned with, because anybody that she's not aligned with will just throw the competition and prevent her from getting into power, and only let the people who are paired up, who are both in the same alliance, win. But we didn't see that, and I'm not sure that was the plan. And so if they're not going to do that, then it's better for her to pair up with somebody else to give them double the chance of getting into power, because then they have a say in what's going to happen. Except even when she did get into power, she didn't do anything. She just rolled over and let Zoe do it.
Oh, and I love how half the house, just as like when they were talking about who the nominations are going to be, they all just know Sarah's going to roll over. It's like, oh yeah, Zoe's. And it's like, it's so hard in that you're right, Karen. The optimal strategy is to pair up with your ally, which is what I think most of the house did. But then it's like, okay, then the next optimal strategy is that to throw it, but then they don't throw it. And then somehow, Sarah still got her target out. It's very odd. It's like we said last week, failing upwards, who is playing the least bad is the one who's like the king, the man with one eye is the king in the land of the blind.
It's just like they are sitting in this house with nothing to do for 3 days at a time, and they can't once discuss the strategy of, hey, if there's pairs again, let's do this strategically. Get with the people we don't want to be in power and throw the competition. Is that so hard? Is that too much to ask, Andrew?
I think it's too much to ask in Australia, because keep in mind, Matt, who's aligned with Zoe, like, the plan is, because in the scene before the nomination challenge, Casey, Matt, and the alphas are talking about how Kieran has to go. So Matt approaches Kieran, and I'm thinking, oh, so Matt's going to throw the challenge. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't. Well, Kieran and Matt get so close.
They got close a couple times, but both times they screwed up. So I do think there's room for interpretation. Is it possible that Matt was throwing this, and every time they got close, he... knocked down.
Matt from Broken Hill, he's a genuine, loyal guy. He would never. Karen, come on. Yeah. Maybe from like a ski, like not Matt.
I think you're
right. Could see Dan doing it. Like, I'll be honest. I think Daniel, we can talk about him later. I think he's actually quickly emerging as probably one of the better players in this house. I could see Dan throwing
really?
It.
Really? Were we going to say that before episode 7 or 8? Sorry.
Oh, honestly, at this point, like, because in episode 9, we find out that there's a Core 4 alliance, right? So if we know that there was a Core 4 alliance from day 1, and Talia still went home when she wasn't included in that alliance, and Dan was, I think that says a lot about Dan. So I'll say it, yeah, as of episode 7, Dan is one of the front runners, and it doesn't make me happy to say it.
It makes me very sad to hear it.
He is playing pretty well, like he is. And it's, I mean, what do you think? Like, for me, he kind of reminds me of look, he has the self-righteousness of like a Jackson, also known as a Mickey, but he also has that competitive spirit of like a Jackson, also known as a Mickey. You know what I mean? Like that drive to win. I think some of the people in this house, yeah,
he's kind of like Hardy.
Yeah, like very Hardy-ish, but I don't think there's a Dr. Will in this house.
No, that's the problem. This is Big Brother 2 with no Dr. Will there. This is Hardy and Nicole just like chilling and talking about how it's not important to win. It's just important to be a good person.
Yes, and Nicole's buying green tea. And Nicole is also telling Kieran off for taking 4 cups of coffee. And Nicole is also, it's like a house of like Nicole and Hardy's and like maybe one Shannon. The Shannon is the closest we get to Dr. Will.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. So ultimately Zoe and Sarah are going to win this one. And as you said, they immediately are all talking about how she's going to roll over. And I was like, oh, maybe they're setting this up to like subvert expectations. They're going to say she's going to roll over and then we're going to find out she's actually this plucky, you know, self-assured. Oh no. She's completely rolling over.
Oh, to be fair though, like I will give Sarah some credit for one, I do think that, like if we, even if we like, look, we can come for Sarah on a few different angles, but I will give her credit for at least not doing what Garth did, which is trying to appease the alphas in like a very like rat floatery kind of way. I do think Sarah is quite firm with her alignments. She's saying, oh, I'm aligned with like the Angela side of the house, but I still want to like play nice. And I will give her some credit for at least in her voting track record, she is not afraid to vote with the minority. And I think that takes a lot of like, that is hard to do. You know what I mean? When you're 19 and you know that you don't have the numbers, but you're still going to vote with the minority side of the house. I think that takes some gumption. And yeah. Secondly, she did initially say, oh, I want Garth, Casey and Xavier on the block. And, you know, there are some people who would not even have suggested those three names. So, Sarah, I don't like that you rolled over, but at least you have the right idea.
I feel like the bar to clear here is so unbelievably low that she said the people she wanted to put on the block. Yeah. And Zoe was like, I hear that, but Kieran is non-negotiable. So let's negotiate a little bit. We'll definitely put up Kieran. And then let's also put up, say, Marissa. And then, you know, we'll compromise and we'll put up Ian as a third option, even though that's not one of the names you said. How about that? How about those three names that I just said as a compromise in opposing your three names? But this is the compromise that they're my three names. And Sarah was just like, all right.
It reminded me of a parent, like, telling a child, like, okay, so I hear that you want to go out on the weekend, but what I'm telling you is that you're going to do homework first. It's even more funny in retrospect, knowing that Zoe's profession is a high school teacher and Sarah is 19.
Yeah.
And that, like, do you remember that scene of them holding hands together while they were doing the Velcro thing? Mm-hmm. And just the visual of the two of them, it kind of reminded me of a teacher escorting a child across the road for the first time.
She is very small, Sarah.
I mean, I like her. Yeah. You know, like, between the knee thing and the fact that she does, I think she's kind of like Haley and BB 20 in that she has the right idea. She's just very young and she's not able to like put her foot down. You know, like when Haley's like, oh, I know Scotty probably shouldn't go up, but oh, I guess, you know, or I know that Caitlin might be nominating Swaggy, but it's like very much that. I think if Sarah has maybe 4 more years, like, and like has matured a little, she'd be a good player. Right now, she's a little young.
Yeah. Well, despite the fact that Zoe managed to get basically choose all of the people that she wants to put up.
Our nominations, remember, right. That's what she calls it, our nominations.
She still manages to screw up in the way that people have screwed up before. I thought, okay, I'm going to talk about this one time. These people, they don't understand that you're not supposed to put up one person that you don't want to go home. You're only supposed to put up three people that you do want to go home. Okay, I've mentioned it because they made the mistake. They got burned for it. Now they know. No, that's not the case. They still don't understand this concept. I don't understand how they cannot understand. It's like these people have been living in a box that does not contain games at all, and they've never played any kind of game ever in their lives.
I mean, but that's what's so glorious about this season, though, in that maybe with the exception of Angela, we are watching everybody who's like, genuinely has no idea what they're doing. It's like the Survivor Gabon on Big Brother. It's like, if you have a house of like, you know, like say 17 people who are like their skill level is at Survivor Gabon, and you have one Paul Abrahamian, right? Then it becomes a steamroll and it becomes, you know, like a predictable, uncomfortable, etc. If everybody is equally bad, then we have a show. We are eating people. You know what I mean? Like
Survivor Gabon though. The game level in Survivor Gabon is like five notches of, like, at least in Survivor Gabon, they talked about onion alliances, right? Like they understood high level concepts.
There's onion alliance here too. Remember the core four. I mean, Dan is playing some version of it.
True. That's fair. So, mid level concept. But they can't get down the basics, which is very, very frustrating to me.
Wait, Taryn, you're not going to tell your alliance that you should spread the votes out evenly so that everybody has an equal chance of going home?
We haven't even talked about episode 8 yet. I'm not even going to go there yet. We're just gonna leave that on the table for now.
Then why don't we go slightly backwards to the scene right before the nomination challenge, where I want to talk very quickly about what the initial plan is, right? So this is the scene where Casey tells Kieran, how many coffees are you taking a day? Mm-hmm. The reason why I want to backtrack to here is that I think it's like a very good place to talk about Garth and his position in the house. So firstly, Casey, when Casey asks that question, Kieran says two a day. Casey then says, you told me it was four. Kieran being a coffee drinker and drinking four cups of coffee a day is the least surprising thing I've heard all day.
Yeah.
It's like, of course he is. But what I've noticed in 7, 8, and 9 is that Casey's entire role is, I kind of like her now, hot take. I like her because I think I figured out who she is as a character. Casey is the grumpy cat of BBAU.
All directed at Kieran.
It's either Kieran or the rain challenge, or she will be like not liking the KFC, or she'll be grumpy in the Italian feast. She is like 100% that person who's never happy. And I'm not going to lie, because Kieran is just constantly outlasting Casey's expectations of him, I'm kind of okay with it, because Kieran's entire existence seems to piss off Casey so much. And it's like no wonder Kieran is impossible to evict, because he lives rent-free in Casey's head.
Yeah, well, she asks him this question, like, first of all, it's condescending, even the tone of the question.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
How many coffees do you drink a day? He's like, two. And she's like, hold on, I'm supposed to be mad at you, and that's not a being mad at you answer. No, you're supposed to have four, because then I can be mad at you, Kieran. He's like, I realized when I said four before that it was a lot, so now I'm only doing two. And she's like, well, that is considerate, and that makes me annoyed even more, because I wanted to be annoyed.
It's like, you know how in every, like, the friendship or the other people or the good people alliance, there's like one person who cries a lot, and then there's one person who's the how dare you person.
Yeah.
Casey is the how dare you person. She's like so indignant all the time. And as long as Kieran outlasts her, kind of like he did with Zoe, spoiler alert, I think I'm very okay with the Kieran-Casey interactions, because like, as with the caveat that Kieran is the one who wins out in the end, because it's just so funny. It's like, Kieran, he literally is doing nothing wrong in terms of like, he like well, not nothing wrong, but he'll be doing like the smallest, like smallest faux pas. And Casey will be like, how could you? You drank 4 cups of coffee. That is just, no. She's so angry all the time. And I'm thinking maybe like, maybe she should start drinking black tea instead of green tea or like 4 cups of coffee. She just needs like a little
less coffee, less tea. Maybe more tea. Less coffee, more tea in her life.
I mean, we can talk about it later about how people are wasting away on the food rations. But Casey is one person I do not want to see hungry. It's like, can you imagine her on Survivor? She would just, oh goodness. Just, I liked her DL though when she said that Kira needs to be sent to like a school where they teach him life skills. Because like the thing about that DR is that she meant every word she said. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, I just want to know where they found this girl. Because she's only 22 and she's just so angry.
Yeah.
She's so.
It is very Annalise. Maybe very she should have shown up in the chicken costume.
Bok, bok. But as a segue, Casey, in her, you know, heated state, then goes to Zoe, Matt, Dan, and Garth and brings up Kieran needs to go because, you know, he drank 4 cups of coffee. And then Garth, interestingly, says Kieran's not a threat. However, you know, he gets talked over by Matt and Daniel and Zoe. And I think that's something interesting to note later about maybe because Garth didn't feel like his voice was being acknowledged within the bigger group, that partially contributes to the vote flip.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, we get the nominations and Angela is not pleased. And so she has the opportunity to call one person into the bunker with her, and she decides the person she wants to bring in is Garth.
Do you think it was the right choice? I guess that's the first thing to bring up.
I mean, it seems to have worked, so I guess so. I'm
results-oriented.
Yeah.
We're also talking about a guy who said, ding dong, the witch is dead in the opening of the episode.
Right. It was a weird choice considering the focus on him as this person that really celebrated over her grave in the game. And it's, you know, he comes in and she spooks him and she's like, oh, I really trusted you. That's why I wanted to bring you in. And he seemingly is eating all of this up. And she's telling us, like, the only reason she did this is because he's got a big mouth. And so she knows that he's going to spread this everywhere. He can't help himself. And she wants this vote to be flipped. So I was definitely confused by the choice at first, but in terms of like who is the most willing to peel off from that group and might be in a potential swing vote situation, I think it probably was the right choice. And she does manage to like get him on board and like willing to work with her. So I think overall, it, you know, definitely works out well.
If you hear a faint noise in the background, that's Zoe's crying because Kieran outlasted her. That was a joke. But I was just trying to figure out how to get that noise still. But with Garth, I think it was 50-50 in that we saw earlier in the episode that he was so happy that Angela left. He was saying lines such as, I've had the best night's sleep because Angela's left the house. I finally feel like I have some skin back in the game. I feel like a weight's lifted off my shoulders. He was jubilant that she was gone, right? So when you bring someone like that into the fold, it's like you're essentially risking that, okay, you're weighing up, does this person's love of gossip trump their love like of hating on me, right? And it's, I think it's very like, that was like a very much a gamble that Angela made. And yes, it paid off, but I don't know if someone like me who's a little bit more risk adverse would have been thinking, oh, is Garth the best choice considering that I have live feeds? Remember, Angela has live feeds and she saw a whole montage of Garth hating on her. Just hating on her.
I mean, I think you have to choose somebody that you're not aligned with because you have to use this as an opportunity to get in with people that you're not already in with. And so, I think that with that in mind, you know, you look at, you can either try to work your way into this like core four alpha group, or you can pick away at their sort of like their extras. And so I think that if this is the route she's deciding to go, and this is the thing too, in this situation, she has a lot more information than we do. She has been able to watch these people. Yeah. All like, she is the me in this situation where like I, where I am explaining the correct move because I've seen everything. She, like, I feel like it's hard for me to critique her, because she's seen a lot more than I have in terms of who Garth is and where he stands and what might work.
Maybe. I would have personally, I think, would have picked Shane, Chad, or Sophie, because you're right, Taryn, in that you want to pick someone from who's kind of in the middle of the house that you can peel off to have his numbers on your side to essentially have a vote flip, right? As we discussed in last week's podcast, part of the reason why we couldn't, they didn't have the numbers to save Angela was because Garth, Shane, Chad, Sophie, like, you needed all of those people and, like, they all wouldn't come over. So I agree 100% that your choice has to be one of those four. I would have personally gone for Shane because I think he is just as effective a campaigner as Garth is. And I think he's a little bit more likable, but also, like, you know, Angela has more information than us. So maybe she's seeing things that we don't know. And maybe Angela, you know, knows what to say to Garth to make him a campaigner.
Yeah. And to that point, right? So she grabs Garth. She tells him, yes. Ian needs to go. Kieran needs to stay. I want to work with you. He's on board. He goes out and we see this quick little montage of him going to Shane and to Sophie and to Chad. And he's saying, all right, we're doing it. Voting Ian. And they're like, yeah. And then he goes down to Hannah and he goes, it's on. She's like, what? Voting Ian. She's like, yeah.
And then Hannah then immediately knows, like, who she needs to talk to. She goes immediately to Kieran, and Kieran's a bit skeptical. Kieran's the first person in that chain of whispers who says, oh, I don't think this is going to work. So it turns out, Kieran, you're like the sensible person. Everybody else is like, oh, yeah, we just know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I got the vibe from these conversations that this had already been talked about.
Been talked about?
That this was all, like their response was kind of like, why are you saying this? We already agreed. You know what I mean?
The voting confessionals, back it up. We can talk about it later, but they do. Like, it's, I think this is, you're right, Tara, and it's premeditated. This was in the works, I think, for a little bit. And I personally remember last week, I said that Garth was the thing that was stopping it, stopping the flip from happening. Because remember, Shane voted against Zoe last time. Like, he has done that before. So keeping all that information in mind, maybe Garth was the right choice in that if he's the one who was the most reluctant and stopping the flips from happening, maybe he's the one you bring into the bunker. Because if he's the last, like, a check or buffer, take him out of the picture and suddenly the dominoes fall down.
Exactly. And that's sort of what I saw. Like, if I'm trying to piece this together, perhaps what it was is that Angela saw that there was a coalition that was going to, or at least wanted to, vote Ian out, and that Garth was the most reluctant person in that group. And she knew that if she could get him in and get him convinced that this is the right call, go with those people, then it would help solidify the group, because they have the numbers to keep Kieran and get rid of Ian even without Garth. They don't need his vote. And I wonder if they would have voted that way even if he hadn't been on board. But as soon as Angela gets Garth, then it's extra confirmed. No worries at all that this is going to flip back.
I agree. And I think another interesting piece of evidence that substantiates your theory is that, remember I said earlier in that scene with after the coffee confrontation, Casey brings up Kieran and Garth says, I don't want Kieran, which already, like, indicates that even if Garth is with the Alphas or the Good People Alliance, there is, like, some thought at the back of his head, either with, because he has alliances with, like, a Chad and a Sophie, or because he himself has already been, like, brought up the idea of, am I, like, you know, in this alliance or am I in the bottom? And maybe I should, you know, do what Shane wanted last week and make a move. Because remember, Shane tried to get Zoe out last week. He did. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't talk about him. He only makes an appearance this week. But I agree with you in that the framework was already, was in place. The crumbles of the cookie were on the trail. And I guess Angela was like, you know, in the ginger dread house at the end of the road with a cup of tea waiting for, you know, Hansel and Garth to get to the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, and do what she wanted. I will say, though, that I think she did a good job, even if I disagree with her choice of person, she did a very good job in the bunker itself. Where I think Angela overheard everything Garth said about her, and she had no, she was not happy, but she did a good job of faking it with him. It's like, oh, he's my minion. He's my butler. He's going to do all my dirty work for him, for me, and I'm going to pretend to love him.
Yeah, it cannot be understated how incredibly powerful it is to be able to watch everything that's happening, even if it's for just 3 days. 3 days is a long time to be able to see every interaction, every detail of everybody's game, what they're all thinking. It's basically like going into the house with a superpower, with like mind reading powers that, like, you know, it's ridiculously overpowered. And Angela has a huge advantage in this game moving forward, even if she didn't have any connections in the game. But she does still have connections in the game. She does still have allies in the game, and she knows exactly how to work people from this point forward. And so this is she's in a pretty killer spot.
Well, we can talk about it in episode 9. Then my question is, if we assume that Angela has all of these advantages and knowledges, then should we judge her a bit more harshly, or scrutinize her a bit more harshly about her decision then later on to potentially, I think, make the wrong decision in terms of who she voted out. Mm-hmm. And to another point, I do think Angela, she got a lot more feeds than Kelsey and Levita did. I don't remember them having like a panel with like little buttons and being able to switch rooms. Like Angela had the actual like BB feeder with like all the cameras.
Yeah. And she could hear them speaking like all the time. It seemed, she even had, I saw it. There was the diary room. Like she had the diary room feeds.
I will say, though, that with the diary room feeds, I think with that one, I don't think the producers would have just like let her eavesdrop on everyone's DRs. I think it was, that was more for, say, like the butler task. And that's my personal interpretation, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Who knows? This is BB Australia where, you know, the rules don't apply. The points don't matter. It's like, whose line is it anyway?
Yeah. Well, so the vote flip is now in motion. And the votes are going to fall on Ian, and Ian is going to be the one voted out in a 7-4-1 vote. And again, I was very surprised, that Ian, I was expecting something else to happen to keep Ian in the game.
But why did Zoe pick Ian out of all people? Because I know that her rationale was, oh, someone who's safe, but she was also, keep in mind, she spends the rest of episode 8 and 9 bawling her eyes out that Ian left. It's like, oh my God, Ian left. Like she was, like Zoe was one pepperoni the dog away from becoming April Lewis. And she was, I haven't seen someone cry that much since like Sabrina from like BB Camp 2. She was upset that Ian left. So my thing was, why did you put up somebody who you clearly care about so much? Like, couldn't you have put up, I don't know, Garth?
Right?
Or Chad? Or Sophie? And there are so many other people who could have been safe. Why Ian?
Well, I think in her mind, it was like she was trying to give Sarah something. Sarah? Like, okay, here's somebody I don't want to put up. I'm going to put that person up for you because that's the compromise.
But Sarah said she wanted Garth up.
I know. It was stupid.
It's like Zoe's like, okay, so Zoe's thinking, oh, I better throw Sarah a bone. And Sarah wants Garth up. But instead of putting up Garth, who I'm not that close with, I'm going to put up Ian. Like, where's the logic?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Am I missing something? Like, am I missing something?
Yeah.
It's like they were doing a brand steal simulation and they were saying, okay, who's eliminated today? Ian.
You're right. Yeah. So that's it for Ian. He's very upset that he's leaving. I really feel like it definitely would have been a contender to win had he made it to the end as such a lovable character. But you know, this is the end of his story. Just gets picked off, you know, victim of circumstance here.
Oh, sweet Disney prince. You know, I will miss you and your spoony-hitting songs and your Patricia the Spider. I think that, look, I'm glad the flip happened, but I'm not happy about who it happened to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I would have preferred losing, like, a Casey here or a Xavier.
And I also feel like this is confusing the narrative to me that, that like, okay, well, I we're definitely supposed to like Ian, but, you know, Angela is the one taking him out. And now, like, heading into the next episode, Daniel is now like, how could they do it to Ian? He was such a great guy. I miss my Ian. And it almost starts to feel like the sort of like the narrative focus is shifting to the alphas. And now they're supposed to be sympathetic. And I feel like we're getting less of Angela in that group. And I'm left confused as to like what they're trying to do.
What they're trying to do is make us like Matt. But we are not going to fall for that. We are not going to buy that. Just because somebody's from Broken Hill, it does not mean that they are automatically going to get our rooting interest. We are not doing that today, people. We are not. But I agree, the narrative is 100% trying to like push the alphas are now the underdogs and we should root for them. But this is also the same alliance that has Casey and Zoe.
Yeah.
Where Zoe literally is saying, I'm just going to pull a random Zoe quote. Like, I have a list of them. I'm just going to pull one out. And you tell me if this is like the something a hero says. She says, oh, God, Kira needs to go. I just feel like if he goes, everyone will relax. And finally, we will be free. I will be so upset if he doesn't go. Is that something a hero says? Keep in mind, she says this in episode 7, then in episode 8, and her goodbye words were, I'm so upset Kieran stayed longer than me. That's supposed to be our hero?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, people think that through villainizing somebody else, they become the hero, right? Like, people think that they are the brave hero standing up to the villain, and they don't. They don't see that they're just being a bully, you know?
100%. Like, even with the segment where Casey's, like, talking about how Kieran doesn't wash a dish or whatever, my takeaway message was, I like Kieran. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
It's like, the more they hate on him, the more likable he becomes. Because, like, nobody likes watching vilification happen that's one-sided. Like, if it's, like, two-sided, it feels a bit more, like, equal. But the thing about this like good people alliance or the alphas is that they're so self-righteous. They think that like everything they touch is like Midas gold, and the other people, they're like, how dare they play? How dare they be strategic? It's just,
and it's a question of scale. Like, you know, perception becomes reality in the house. And so like when there's not something bigger to hate someone for, to hate someone for, then you take small things. And like, so the person who's the most annoying, even if it's just they drink a lot of coffee, they don't do their dishes, like that, our society likes to take things to the most extreme that they possibly can. And so this like minor annoyance about coffee and dishes becomes, he's the worst person in the world, and he should be shunned. And the same thing happens with the audience. We see it all the time, that you know, we have seasons with people who do very terrible things and those people get hated on, and then we have seasons where this person targeted somebody and we're a little bit mean about it. And they're also hated on just as much as the terrible things that people did. Right. You know what I mean? It can get very extreme in ways like this when the scale is just, you know, not properly attuned to this small environment.
I mean, it's all about a relativity, right? Say, remember on Survivor San Juan del Sur where John Mish was the villain for drinking wine.
Yeah.
This is the guy who's the wine drinker whose dad has brain cancer and is like married to the girl who has an infertility disorder. He's the villain because he drank wine too many times. And then literally like in Worlds Apart, then we see like Will attacking Shireen, and they're both like, or Missy, who like gave out too much rice, is the villain. It's like if there's nobody else on the cast who is like, say, like really playing a real life villain.
Yeah.
I would argue then the little things that all the little faux pas that a character does starts adding up and becoming amplified, like you said, Aaron, in an echo chamber that the audience hates on. And I think in psychology, they call that the behavior contagion, where it's like you see it in high school cliques all the time, where, or in Big Brother 19, where one person says a rumor or says something bad about, oh, like, I don't like how Mark and Elena are, you know, hanging out with themselves. And then that gets turned into, oh, they think they're better than us. You know what I mean? It's like, this downward exaggeration spiral. And it's really unfortunate to see it in the fan base too. So, PSA, do not send death threats through the house guests. The official BB Australia account has had to tweet out and post on their Instagram that some people have been getting death threats. Look, I agree. Zoe should have gotten the black tea. But that is not an excuse.
That's exactly it. You're totally right. Like Zoe is the most annoying, and her biggest offense is that she snubbed Angela on the black tea, and like that's super annoying. But it's not death threat worthy. She's not like this massive villain, right?
Exactly. And even like if we're going to be like slightly more serious, and we're talking about the people of color angles on it. Sending death threats is not the most constructive way to educate someone.
No.
I don't know about you, but when I say converted my grandma into voting for marriage equality, I didn't accomplish that by sending her death threats. You know what I mean?
What?
I accomplished.
You didn't send your grandma death threats? What?
Oh, I know, right? Like maybe if I sent her death threats, she would have come around to it sooner. No, I like sat her down. I, you know, try to like explain to her calmly. And, you know, try to reason with it. I didn't like say, you know, send her 5 green tea emojis and say, die.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on, people. Let's be nice to Grandma Zoe. Oh, my God. I didn't say Zoe is a very lovely lady. Yeah. But let's talk about the vote confessionals, though, very quickly.
Yes. I think
it's like, yeah. Okay. So the Marissa vote was from Xavier. This is another thing I want to bring up about BB Australia. They always seem to be like a hinky vote.
Is Xavier just like secretly doing the alphabetical strategy from Borneo?
I don't even know. I wouldn't be surprised if he is. He's very smart and he's so well insulated, but like every now and then he'll just throw out a vote for it.
And this vote could have mattered if Garth hadn't flipped like and Xavier votes the right way. They maybe could have like scrounged up some kind of tie situation. But no.
Well, we could talk about how ties and how close ties came to in the 651 vote of episode 9. But I guess BB Australia has got to do BB Australia Gabon things. And it wouldn't be Gabon if there is some random vote out there.
Yeah.
Xavier voted for Marissa saying, oh, I was going to vote for Ian, but sorry, I was going to vote for Kieran, but your words rattled me. Okay. The 4 votes for Kieran were the blindsided people. Wasn't this delicious though? Their reactions. They were so shocked. It was like all 4 votes from Kieran, Casey, Matt, Ian, Daniel. They were all along the lines of, I'm sorry, but it's your time to go. We've given you a lot of chances. So they had no idea that it was coming. The 7 Ian votes, out of those 7, I would say that the interesting ones are the ones I'm going to highlight. So Sophie's one, she says, tonight I'm going to do a strategy move. If he's put up there again with me, the boys are going to have his back. It's about numbers. So to me, that I think suggests to me that she knows, Sophie knows that, say, that Xavier, Matt, and Daniel, and like Shane, and like even Chad have some sort of guys deal going on, which I think is very relevant when we talk about episode 9. Chad says that, Chad says something about, it's a strategy move, I've got to do it. Shane says it's a strategical move on my behalf, let's get the game started. Kieran's one is the one where So he says, I'm going to preface this by hoping that I don't end up with egg on my face. But Zoe, I have a message for you. When you put up someone like Ian as a swing vote, you need to make sure the other 2 people aren't working together. Checkmate, Zoe. I think he means pawn. Why does he say swing vote? Have these people not watched any Big Brother? Like the US?
That's the thing. And we're going to get into it with episode 8. But it's almost like they think that the people nominated, that their votes count more or something. Oh, God.
I don't even know. Like, it's like I was cringing on the inside in that, like, No, it's not swing vote. No, it's not fake. The word is pawn. And what's more galling is that Kieran even says checkmate Zoe. The chess metaphor was in his head. And then I don't know about you, but I was like cringing on the inside every time Dan said bait, but we can talk about it in episode 8.
We're gonna talk about it. Are we ready for episode 8?
Oh yes, let's talk about the bait of it all.
All right, so even before episode 8, we get a preview about, guys, wait for it, a brilliant strategic move is on the way. And so we head into episode 8. Garth has been exposed as a flip-flopper. And Angela is going to return to the house.
He even says at one point, oh, when life gives you lemons, you know, let Ange squeeze lemons in your eyes. Because that's what happens, right? It was just very much a case of sour grapes. And Dan in general is a lot in this episode, because even before Angela returns, he is busy being a Debbie Downer. He's looking at the ants and saying, oh, the ants remind me of
Ian. He's sad about Ian. He's just this poor puppy dog that's lost his friend.
The Dan lost his Ian. What can I say?
Yeah.
But it just struck me, because this is the same Dan who said, oh, like, Ian is my hound. Mm-hmm. Ian is like, I'm using him. I don't care. But which makes me think, is Dan hurt that Ian left, or is he more hurt that he got?
I think it's both. I do think it's both. He's feeling down, and he's mad at Garth because he knows that Garth had something to do with it.
I know what you did.
Yeah.
I know what you did. And just some of the Dan quotes in general, though, are just so, I'm circling around to liking him, because unlike, say, like Jackson, also known as Mickey, Dan's like self-righteousness has like unintentional comedy attached to it. So here's a line that he says that is very Jackson / Mickey. He says, oh, I guess good guys finish last. I'm going to have to be selfish. Oh, God, for the first time in my life, I'm going to have to be selfish. And he says, oh, I know, right? It's a tough morning without Ian. Nobody's feeding the fish. Nobody's cleaning the pool. Is Dan like just listing like chores that Ian did for him?
Yeah.
He's like, that's why he misses Ian. Oh, but I don't know about you, but when he was talking about the ants and he was crying, I got a flashback to Polly and the butterfly.
I mean, I feel like I felt this way all season long, that they are working very hard to make Daniel as likable as possible.
This is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because, do you think he's going far then?
I felt that way for a while. I felt like Daniel and Kieran and I'm honestly a little skeptical about Angela now. I wonder if they were just building her up for this big moment, and now they're going to drop her.
Chad and Sophie, especially with episode 9 and that drama.
I agree. Yeah. I saw what you were saying with Chad and Sophie through these three episodes. We get Matt talking about the Garth situation, and they have this sort of this awkward dinner later, and they get some letters from home, and they're all crying. I'm actually not somebody I feel like when this happens on Survivor and like the loved ones visit, there's sort of like a lot of people that are like, ah, this is dumb, we don't like to see this. I'm normally kind of like, I kind of like it, you know. I feel like I don't really know these people well enough. Like, I haven't seen an intro package for half of them still. I'm sure we're going to at some point, but...
Who's Xavier?
Yeah, I just, I don't have an emotional connection to them, and so I just wasn't doing it for me.
Well, what's interesting is that the people that did get intro packages that all got highlighted in the letter segment, I think, says a lot about the edit or the edging of it all. So Shane gets called to the DR. And basically, he gets the HOH letters, right? Firstly, I'll say it says a lot about BBAU versus BBUS, in that an HOH letter on BBUS is like Shelly getting a letter from her dog. BBAU, it's Shane getting a touching letter from his wife and kids. It's like, can you imagine, like, if Shelley were in this cast and her letter was from her dog? So after Shane reads this touching letter from his kids, she's like, oh, so my dog is saying bark, 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 bark. I love you, mommy. It's not even the same universe. Yeah. But then, the four people who got highlighted, got a lot of attention of the letter segments were Chad, Matt, Daniel, and Sophie. Zoe and Ange also, like, got their letters. Like, everyone got their letters, but the ones who got to, like, read them out for more than 10 seconds were those people. And I think it says a lot that we got to see, say, like, Matt talk about the boy from Broken Hill or whatever, whatever the hell that means. And one fun thing about Dan's letter, he says he got his letter from his ex-girlfriend, the love of his life. Imagine if Talia was still there.
She would have been staring daggers.
Oh, God. We missed out.
Yeah.
I think in retrospect, it would have been so funny if she was still in the house.
Okay, okay. So I think it's time to talk about the strategy that they come up with.
Oh, the green room deal, right?
Yeah.
Can we just say, is it like only like, I know it's not a big house, but why is all the strategy happening in the green room? Do they not have other rooms with a strategy?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I will say, I think it's fair because like there's basically the big open common room, the big open backyard. Yeah. And then they have like the two bedrooms that are still connected via like a window. And so
they don't even have an HOH room.
So yeah, it's really the only private place to go, I think.
But maybe they should have more rooms.
Yeah, the guys group up in the room, and it's, I believe, Shane, Chad, Daniel, and Matt.
Yes.
And
Xavier. You forgot Xavier.
Was Xavier there? I only saw four of them. Xavier is invisible.
Xavier was that true.
They come
that's so funny. There are five people and you saw four.
they talk about Garth and how annoying Garth is. And they seemingly flip Shane and Chad on Garth, that they're willing to take Garth out. I'm not sure how this came about or why they feel this way. I imagine that what happened is that, you know, Daniel and Matt and Xavier were like, oh, Garth flipped on us. Like, he was working fully with us. And maybe that was news to Shane and Chad, who felt like, oh, so this guy's just a flip-flopper. Maybe we should take him out. Maybe it went something along those lines. It's hard to find, like, a through line otherwise.
I think you're right in that even before Angela returned, Dan was awkward around Garth. We have that great Sarah DR about how the house is divided and awkward. She even says that it's like a Phoebe midlife crisis. I guess in the outside world, when you have a midlife crisis, you buy a Porsche. In the Big Brother world, when you have a midlife crisis, you make a big move and stare awkwardly at your enemies. But Garth was very much trying to make, I think, amends with Chad. We see him earlier, even before the dinner, approaching Chad, approaching Casey, approaching Xavier. He's really trying to get in with them. And I think that was the wrong move from Garth, because I think what happens is that Dan then retains everything that Garth said and then basically spat it all out in the green room. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. I think Garth might have said something like, hey, I'm not the only one who flipped. Shane, Chad, and Sophie all flipped with me, which is not a lie. But then if Dan takes that information to Chad and Shane, how is he going to present it? He's going to say, oh, Garth threw out your name. And I think that's exactly what happened, because very much this is a case where the middle group, all of them made the move together, right? Like, they all flipped together, but Garth is the only one who copped all the heat.
Yeah.
And I think this particular episode is a case where the two sides of the house, they broke bread, they had their Italian meal, and they decided, you know what? We're not going to like fire shots at each other. We're just going to make a deal, get out the middle person, and then, you know, have a truce for one eviction cycle.
Which is really a good move. Yeah. For Daniel, yeah, especially, and Daniel's side, because they had their backs against the wall, and this middle group could have pressed their advantage and kept going. It turns out to work even better for the middle group because of who wins the HOH.
Oh, yeah.
But like the idea of, you know, Shane and Chad actually targeting Garth, would be pretty silly to begin with. But the idea of them sacrificing him to the alpha group is a good idea. The idea of the alpha group pulling in the middle group and saying, like, we're with you, let's go after Garth and not us, is definitely a good move, especially if it works. But all of that being said, the plan they come up with is that, okay, guys, here's the deal. We need to make sure that two of the people sitting in this room get up there on the nomination block so that they can vote out Garth.
Bait and switch. Bait and switch. It's all about the big bait, right?
This is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard in my life. Luan couldn't even dream of a plan this dumb. There's no upside whatsoever. There's no reason at all for any of this to happen. It doesn't make any sense.
You guys are so dumb. Jeremy Collins is rolling in Boston right now. He would be irate.
Yes.
This is so funny to me because I don't think I've heard you this upset about a strategical misstep in a while.
I get frustrated when people don't make sense, Andrew.
I mean, I just think the difference between us is that I had no expectations for these people. And you're right. It's just so, like, let's spell it out for everyone. You know what? I'm not even going to use my words. I'm going to quote Zoe. Zoe says, I'm nervous because I didn't think Ian would go. Why are we putting people up from our side? I'm nervous this will backfire. And that's Zoe. Zoe, who is by no means the strategical bastion of this house.
And she still doesn't.
She doesn't.
She still listens. She does. She puts them up after what just happened.
But Dan is so confident. He's like, oh, this is like, guys, I'm a genius. I'm a brain transformational specialist. I know what to do. I'm going to go up as a pawn. Sorry, swing vote, bait.
Yeah, well, we need two of us up there. Like, again, they're the only people that can vote. Because if two of them are up there, then guess what, guys? We outnumber Garth on the nomination shares. And that means that we'll get to vote him out. And that'll, you know, the house will just abide by the fact that two out of three nominees want the other one gone.
This would be an even worse move if this were US Big Brother, where the nominees can't vote. Because essentially, you have a guy saying, I'm volunteering to be put on the block where I could potentially go home, and I also can't vote, and I have no control over it. It's like, oh God, my brain hurts thinking about it, but I'm also so entertained because this is coming from a guy who is probably playing the best, and he is so sure that this is like the smartest, like Mensa, like next level strategy that like he thinks he's like doing the evolution of strategy here.
Right. And like and that's the most, this leads me to the most absurd thing about all of this is that
this is a
crazy move. This is an insanely like just out, just ridiculously terrible move. It doesn't make any sense. The show plays it straight. They edit this like it's a good move. They edit this like Daniel has orchestrated a masterful blindside bait and switch, as though the people that make this show are also falling for this idea that they don't understand that this makes no sense, which makes a lot of sense considering what the game is and how it's been edited so far that they wouldn't understand. But the fact that it's this is like if Luan, who, if you are not a fan of Big Brother and you have not watched Big Brother 13, Luan is a player who volunteered to go on the block and be evicted because there was this idea that expect the unexpected. There was going to be a twist, and he thought if he got evicted that week, he would get special powers like Angela. But in actuality, he just got evicted, and he had a chance to return and did not. This would be like,
what did Devin say? That is not an advantage.
Right. This would be like if we watched the Luan episode and the edit made it look like this was a brilliant move. That Luan, it was like, I've got a plan, guys. This is the way to go. And then, like, they edit it together, and it's like, Luan, you have been evicted. And it's like, boom, boom, boom. Like, what a great move, Luan. Like, Julie opens up the episode. The New York Times has been saying this is the greatest move that we've ever seen in the history of Big Brother.
Australian Dan Gisling. It is Australian Dan Gisling. It's literally a Dan, but it's Dan Gisling. He's Gislinging everybody. It's like, but that's the crazy thing in that I felt that they were trying to edit Dan as this like hero genius, but all I got from it was, oh, I love Angela because she's the one who's calling it out saying, he's on the block. Let's just get him out.
Yeah.
Like, where she has that great confessional where she says, Dan is on the hierarchy with the Xaviers and the Mats. If we don't strike tonight, it'll be very hard to get him out of this game. I don't want to give him that $250,000. I want to win that $250,000. If Dan is here, I am not going to win that $250,000. If Garth is here, I will win that $250,000. And I just felt for Angela so much where you could feel the vein popping in her forehead where Sarah was saying, I want Garth out, where Angela's like saying, it's not rocket science, but they're making it so hard. Put your feelings and emotions aside. Focus on the prize. Get rid of the biggest threat in front of you. He just volunteered. It's been handed to you on a platter. Just pluck it out. And I was like, oh, Angela, keep in mind, it's been well established now that she is a BB US super fan. She has watched BB Canada. She even watched the BB versions in Africa. Yeah, she's not, you know, the mastermind of the game, but she at least knows basic concepts like don't volunteer to be on the block.
Right.
Don't make it out. So just, I felt for her so badly when she, you could feel her palpating saying, guys, let's just vote Dan out. Why are you guys keeping?
Yeah.
It's like, but you know what's crazy though, Taryn, to jump in very quickly, one note. The thing is that Dan made a really bad move, but he also made a good move in that he convinces Chad and Shane to vote to turn on Garth, which is just, what? How did he do that? But then he also volunteers on the block. So it's like, what does it come out to in the wash, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So we get to the HOH competition, and it's another, it's a very similar one. They have to balance these blocks, and then, you know, make it back to the other side. Surprise, surprise, Zoe's also good at this one.
I guess she's really good at, you know, keeping things from toppling over, you know, unless it's a game.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she can stack dominoes, she can stack Jenga blocks, but when it comes to balancing her game relations, not exactly the most stacker friendly.
Yeah. So she wins. And she, as we said, was nervous about the plan because of what just happened with Ian. But goes through with it anyway. And like, it's just like, it was best. Like, there's this group of people that are against them, and there's Garth. And like, okay, great. You convinced those other people to go after Garth. They're making the mistake of not continuing the war and wasting their time on the flip flopper. Boom, you got him. You convince, oh, now you're doing that. Oh, you bought into your own thing. Oh, okay. And you're nominating your own people. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Firstly, like, it's out of the three nominees. It was Dan, Garth, and Shane. So two out of three. So I'm thinking in the back of my head, Zoe, you got two out of three last time as well, but then Ian went home. Do you really want to risk this again?
Mm-hmm.
And the second point is when she won the challenge, immediately Sophie says, challenge beast, challenge beast. And Zoe is verbally saying, I didn't want to win that. Two in a row. I didn't want to win that. No. Mm. Why did she win this? I thought throwing challenges was like a thing in Big Brother. Am I like missing something here?
I think she couldn't help herself. Because again, like she doesn't need it. She's nominating for like three. She's nominating an ally. She's nominating basically a floater at this point, and nominating somebody who just flipped the vote against her in the previous round, but without the intention of having him be the one that goes home.
And she's also living in a house where the last women who won two HOHs got evicted, Talia and Angela. Uh-huh. And she's saying, oh, I can do that. No problem. It's like, what? I guarantee you, I will like stake my hand like and my life on it. If Zoe didn't win this HOH and she like let Matt win it, she would not have gone home the next week.
Oh, for sure.
Like, sorry, the next like episode, like 100%, especially considering that the vote was 6-5-1. And we can talk about it later. But if she didn't win this one, her only challenge win would have been the one with Sarah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is like a jewel thing. She didn't need to win this. And for me, it just blew my mind that one, she won an HOH that she didn't need to win. And two, she like made the same mistake she did last time, which is nominated one of our allies. And then somehow she just stumbled into not seeing Daniel go home. It was just, oh my God, Zoe, you are giving me a conniption here.
Yeah.
And again, maybe it's drinking too much green tea. I don't know.
Yeah. So ultimately, you know, the campaigning doesn't seem to go anywhere. It seems like it is pretty locked in to Garth the whole way through.
But I disagreed.
Yeah.
I thought Angela was really hustling.
I mean, she was like, trying, but it didn't seem like she was making much progress to me.
Well, we remember we get that scene where Angela is talking to Hannah, Mercer, and Sarah, right? On the bed. And we have that great screenshot of the four of them. And can we just say, I feel so vindicated last week in saying that the four of them are an alliance. Mm-hmm. I read it in the Danny interview and people didn't believe me. And they say it here as well. Like, finally, vindication for Andrelicious. But Angela says, this is going to be a boys club and one by one we'll be out. And Hannah and Sarah, Marissa, they all commit to voting Dan. The problem is that they need, seven votes. And we can talk about it at the vote count. I think this was a case where they, Chad and Sophie were the key. Like, I think, like, those two. And I don't think they were willing to commit. And I think that's why in the end it became a lopsided 12-1, in my opinion. I think it was getting close. And I think we can talk about it in the voting professionals. Those girls were, like, they were very much wanting Dan out. And I think that's why maybe we should talk very briefly about the Garth, Chad, and Sophie discussion. The three of them in the green room, remember, right before the eviction room thing, where Garth specifically says to Chad and Sophie, like, Dan has to go, we have to make a move. So at that point, what do you think, like, Chad and Sophie were thinking when they were talking to Garth? Because I got the impression that they were going to send him home, but I felt that they did sway a little. You know what I mean? Like, there was like a small possibility there. It didn't happen, but what do you think?
And again, it's hard to know what's on the minds of these people.
Without live feeds?
But it's plausible that the people in the middle group are playing strategically, and we just haven't seen their logic too much, and that, you know, people like Shane and Chad were not like fully like that they wouldn't have nominated themselves and Garth if they had won, right? That they were just, you know, playing along so that they would be safe. So if that's the case, if they are halfway reasonable players, I would imagine that their thought process here is, okay, well, we've managed, clearly these people are working in good faith because they nominated themselves, and they trust us. And that means that if we play along and we get rid of Garth, then, we are back in the middle, like that we were able to surgically strike Ian, expose ourselves, and then be able to step right back into the middle again and have these women, Angela and Marissa and Hannah and them, still going after the alphas, and have the alphas still going after those women, and we get to sit back and watch. And that puts them in a pretty killer spot.
We'll just say that, yes, the strategy has been really bad, but I'm glad that there is strategy, even if it's bad, because you sound so much more excited this week than you did last week. It's like last week you were saying there's like no strategy. We don't even need to talk about it. The house task was the most interesting part with the ginger dread house. At least this week, I can feel like your excitement / frustration at the quote unquote moves made. So it's something.
I mean, yeah, I almost feel like I'm talking about Big Brother 19 a little bit, where I'm like, I'm talking about theoreticals instead of what's actually happening. You know what I mean? Yeah, but at least there's enough seeds there that I can talk about theoreticals.
See, this kind of reminds me of like a non-trashy Big Brother 9, where there's no logic. There's just no logic. But at least there's something happening. Like
well, they were playing hard, though, at least.
Yeah, like, you know, like in Big Brother 9, we had, who's that woman who flipped the house because someone called her a mother? the Sheila. Yeah, Sheila. Yeah, Sheila. It was like, it's like we're looking at a house full of Sheilas. And it's something, you know, like it's better than like, you know, last week where we were just, you know, talking, we were talking more about Sarah's knees. That's distracting.
Yeah.
But I will say though, I'll give Sophie some credit in that after Garth talks to them, Sophie then takes Chad to the bedroom and says, I want Dan and Matt gone. They're the popular group. We have to get them gone. And we don't see what Chad says, but judging from the 12-1 vote, I do think this is a case where Chad put his foot down and said, no, I don't feel comfortable with this. I promised those guys. I gave them my word. End of story. And I look, ultimately, it doesn't mean anything because it was a 12-1 vote, but I will give Sophie some credit in that at least she was considering it. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
You know, like it's, let's also, you know, point out the fact that Chad, Sophie, and Shane, they all did flip on Ian. So, you know, like I could see like in a worse timeline, all of them just don't care and they're just marching to the end to let Dan win. So, you know, at least Sophie's trying.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to compliment her because we're going to, you know, criticize her a bit in episode 9.
Yes, yes, definitely. So ultimately, it's a very lopsided vote here. Garth is going to get evicted. And
he said it's the closest vote so far, remember? He said, oh, I think I'm going to stay, but it'll be a close vote, even though it's going to be unanimous.
And Xavier, of course, makes a speech against Garth in what might be the only somewhat interesting thing to come out of Tribal Council from Big Brother. And then on his way out the door, Garth is like, by the way, I was in the bunker with Angela. Or no, I think he just said I was in the bunker.
In bunker. Yeah, I was in the bunker. As if that makes sense to everybody else. And they know what a bunker is.
I loved Angela's response, though. She was like, no, I was in the bunker. Which was perfect. Yeah, like you know, like confusion and like that doesn't make any sense. I was in the bunker. Like it had nothing to do with her. And I feel like it seems like she got away with it pretty cleanly.
I mean, it's partially because, you know, the bar is very low. Like you said, John. Yeah. This is a house that cares more about the number of coffees you drink than about the lies you've told. But, you know, yeah, credit to Angela. She's able to, you know, get by. And I don't think people particularly care whether she was in the bunker or not because it doesn't matter. Yeah. Really doesn't.
So we head into, let's talk about the voting confessionals.
Well,
anything of interest there that goes, that explains anything beyond what we've already talked about?
Honestly, like I think I'll only talk about Chad, Sophie, Shane. Yeah, look, I'm not going to mention all of them because like a lot of them is like yada yada. They're a snake, blah blah blah, predictable. I'll just talk about the ones that are relevant or interesting. Sophie and Chad basically both say, "Oh, I want to work with him, but we don't know where his loyalties lie. We just can't count on him." And Shane says, "I'm voting for Garth tonight. He was originally one of my closest allies, but he's broken that trust in the last 24 hours by playing both sides of the fence," which implies to me that, okay, what happened is Garth probably told Dan, you know what I mean? And the alphas, oh, the vote flip against Ian wasn't just my idea. Shane did it as well. And I think that was a really bad move on Garth's part, in that I think if Garth just didn't say the names Chad, Sophie, or Shane, he probably doesn't get all the flack. Like I could see like Zoe winning this and nominating, say, like Chad, Sophie, and Shane potentially instead of Garth, like in another timeline. And I do think that the reason why the vote slipped on Garth so quickly is because he threw Shane under the bus, so he was trying to play a rat floater very unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
Kieran, interestingly, says, I didn't trust you before, but it's gotten to the point where I can't work with you either. And on Instagram, actually, he confirmed that he's actually a fan of Vanessa. So it's like, oh, Kieran, you are a fan, because he said that he didn't care who he trusted and didn't trust. He just wanted to work like with people whose incentives he could trust. Mm. And he couldn't trust that Garth had like was incentivized to work with his side of the house. And the only one I'll mention is Marissa. Look, with the Marissa Dia confessional, I'm mentioning it not because it's interesting, but to point out that the editors are 100% playing shenanigans. Because in the episode, they edited the confessional to say, I'm voting this person because he's my biggest threat. The full confessional is, originally, I was going to vote for Dan because he's my biggest threat. And then I received some information, so I'm voting out Garth. So the episode made it sound like Marissa's voting out Garth because he's a threat. But the full confessional is, oh, I was going to vote Dan, but then the vote flipped. And yeah. Angela's was great. She just said, sorry, I can't save a sinking ship. Simple.
There it is. It sounds to me like my my theory of like the middle group maybe intentionally trying to continue to play the middle is more like the two bros were mad at Garth and they wanted Garth to leave.
I think Sophie is like this. I would say like she's the most intentionally trying to play the middle, because you see her in episode 9 talking with the girls, and then you also see her, I think, connected to the bros via Chad. So I think she's an interesting person to keep in mind, where I think she reminds me a bit of Nicole from BB18 in terms of the game she's playing, right? She's in a showmance and she's very much like, she even has a like slight petulance down pat, but I do not think anyone's going to come for her. And I think if anyone does nominate her, they'll always take out Chad before they take her out. Just a theory.
All right. Well, we head into
episode 9.
Yes, episode 9. And we start out with that the women are spending a lot of time in the bathroom doing makeup, and the guys are making fun of them. And Big Brother decides to step in and say, all right, guys, the women are taking, on average, 5 hours every day to do makeup in the bathroom. I don't believe this.
Me neither.
I mean, I understand. You're in a house. There's nothing else to do. But I've watched Big Brother US live feeds. They don't spend 5 hours a day doing it. They spend a few hours on like live show days doing makeup. But not 5 hours every day. Come on, Big Brother.
Yeah. Maybe because Australia is in a different time zone from the US, time works differently here. But even as an Australian, I'm telling you, it didn't feel like 5 hours.
Yeah.
And is it just me? But it also felt a little unfair where they said the boys will get 2 hours of bathroom time, including 120 minutes of hot water. As an Australian, let me tell you, like, no matter how good your plumbing is, if somebody uses all like hot water for 120 minutes, the next people who come in are going to have no hot water. So essentially they're sentencing the women to cold showers. It's like, what? This feels unfair.
Oh man. How do they control that? What do they just turn off the hot water? They're just like, sorry guys, no more.
It runs out. Like it runs out. There's a finite quantity.
Well, but clearly they had enough for exactly 120 minutes.
Well, I mean, considering the fact that Shane and Dan were using the hot water showers to have like a water fight with the shower nozzles, it's like clearly they were not exactly being frugal with their hot water usage.
Yeah. They have some fun in the bathroom and they do some stuff. I thought like it was a moderately entertaining premise, but I think it went on for too long.
I agree. The only thing of note that I made was like, Casey, once again, she continues her role as the resident grumpy person, where when Big Brother informs them that the girls would get one bathroom pass, she says, one? Why? She's just so angry all the time. And then, like, the next time we see her, she then says on day 19, I'm starving. We are wasting away.
Yeah. We also hear from Shane that he can't even sleep. He's just thinking so much about how he needs to get out Daniel, Matt, and Xavier. And it's like, dude, just had an opportunity. All right, though. Fine. This, again, points me in the direction of, like, this was not a strategic move on his part.
Oh, yeah.
This was, he was just mad at Garth. And so he talks to Chad about it in the room. And Matt almost catches them. And it's a whole thing.
Matt in his spy nest.
Yeah.
Very Tony Marcos, nearly catching them from that vantage point. But you're right, Taryn. It's he literally can't sleep because he has buyer's remorse. He says, I've had a hand in getting Garth out, but now I'm coming to realize that there's a pecking order where Daniel, Matt, and Xavier are controlling the house. And I'm having a bit of a wake-up call. A literal wake-up call. Had an opportunity not even 4 hours ago to make the move.
Yeah.
4 hours ago. And you're realizing this now. It's just, but this is a really good segue to talk about the very BB Australia nature of it, because Shane's reasoning for Dan, Matt, and Xavier, he tells Chad, I've been thinking, if it comes down to a live vote, you're not beating Dan, Matt, or Zave. No one in this house is. Matt is a definite threat. It's eat or be eaten. What do you think about, I think now they're finally metagaming in terms of they are aware that in a final three Australia vote. So how do you feel about that?
I'm willing to bet that they were doing that before as well, and that played a role in why they decided to flip on Ian. And that Ian was so lovable and likable that they decided to take the shot while they had the opportunity.
Well, this would be a good time for, as your resident Australian correspondent, to bring up some some BB Australia meta knowledge. Is that the reason why Shane is saying this? Is that so? This is BB 12 technically, correct? Yeah, BB Australia 12. So keep in mind, I'm just going to list some mad facts at you. BB Australia 11, the final two are Harry and Travis, who won a public vote over Sky. So men beat a woman. In BB 10, Tim Dormer, who you might know, won. He beat a woman as well. BB 9, it was men. The last time a woman won a public vote format in Australia was Terry in BB 8, which was in 2008, nearly 10 years ago. All of the men that I have listed, Ben, Tim, Harry, all of those people, they're all white men who, they're all, although they're different archetypes, they all present in a very, they're all heroes, let me just put it that way, like quote unquote heroes. And I think that's what Shane is coming from, because in the BB Australia meta game, you have to consider the public vote, right? And I think this is a very interesting intersection in that essentially, they were playing BB US, but then all of a sudden, they also have to deal with the BB UK, BB Australia strategy. Mm-hmm. And in BB Australia, BB UK, Matt, someone like Matt and Dan and Dave, they do win. Because the reason why is that all those people I listed, those are all people who were not only heroes, but they were considered the most likable bloke, like the most palatable to the audience. And I hate to break it to people, but Dan, Matt, and Xavier are popular with the Australian public. And Shane is right. I don't know why, but they are. And I think that's interesting to consider in that. So I ask you, Taryn, if you were in the house, right, what would you rather face with? Would you rather face the BB US metagame of jury management, or face the BB Australia conundrum of, okay, who can I take to the end who will be less palatable for the Australian voting public? Like, in your opinion, which win mechanic would you find easier to manage?
Easier to manage would probably be Big Brother Australia, because in Big Brother US, you have to manage 7 to 9 individual people who are going to be completely outside of your control for up to 2 months, away from you. Whereas in this format, Big Brother Australia, with the audience votes for the winner, you just have to convince production. You just have to play production, give them what they want. If they like you enough and they want you to win over the other people that you're in the finals with, then they're going to give you the edit that gets you the win over the other people in the finals with. And you're in constant contact with production. And so, I feel like it would be easier to manage that. And you'd also, you know, it's also a bit more predictable, like who the audience likes, than who a jury will vote for. And so you can couple that with making sure that you get to the end with two people that are not as likely to be liked. And you can look at that into also in terms of like who's getting called to the diary room a lot. Who do the producers tend to give challenges to, give tasks to? You can see it's all very visible. It's already right in front of you. Whereas the jury house is somewhere, you know, that you don't know and you have no contact.
Well, I would agree to disagree with you here in that, so I would agree that for you, it would be easier for like to manage the Australian public than the jury management. But as like a minority, I'd actually argue that I would prefer the jury management. And this is why. So Sharifa brought this up in your diversity panel. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Taryn, I want to commend you for being a great ally, for bringing Sosa and Sharifa and Lita to have that panel, because it brought up a very interesting discussion about how when you're a minority or you're a person of color or you're not a straight white cisgender dude. Because let's be honest, the people that Shane brought up were Dan, Matt, and Xavier, who are all straight white cis male dudes.
Yeah.
And the two, and Chad and Shane talking about that is no coincidence, because they probably know that, oh, because the last time a woman won this was what? BB, like, what? Like 2008.
Mm-hmm.
If we get rid of like the other straight white men, then we will win, because the Australian public, they have certain implicit biases. And Sharifa on your panel brought up that when you're a minority, you not only have to play the game against the people in the house, but also the people who are in the production side, right?
Yeah.
You're playing two games, because you're trying to be a good role model or trying to be a good representative. And I would argue that for me, I would actually prefer the jury management, because it's already a lot of stress when you're thinking about, how am I being represented? Well, am I representing my demographic, my minority status well? Are they going to portray me in a way that just, conforms to gender like queer stereotypes or Asian stereotypes? Like, when you're dealing with that extra level of metagaming, I think that's, I would rather deal with the jury metagaming, because at least I get to know those people one-on-one. So I have more information about what kind of people they are, right? And I could, you know, leave a goodbye message, or I could, it's my control essentially. But when it comes to when you're a minority person, and that's why it's interesting that the people who this is being brought up with, that Matt, even though I personally think he's not that great, is automatically assumed as being a front runner, has a lot to, it's like, it's basically hinting that certain types of people have the privilege of automatically being loved by the audience. And I was actually in Australian Survivor casting. I actually made finals twice. So do you remember on that panel when Lita brought up that she made, she applied for Big Brother twice and she made finals once? Mm-hmm. Do you remember what she said?
Yeah.
So it was very similar for me in that when I went, the time that I made a pretty deep run on Australian Survivor casting was when I was asked to be more sassy. I was asked to be more campy, more snarky. And saying that to a queer person is like very much coded. And in Big Brother Australia and UK, when you, more so I would say Australia, because I think in the UK they call out implicit biases more. But in Big Brother Australia, when you are, say, being told to be more sassy, or you're being told to be more, you know, like what the producer told Kemi with waggling your finger, if the producers are telling you to enforce a stereotype, but then they're using those same stereotypes to essentially basically vilify you in some ways to the audience who is already preconditioned to accept certain types of behavior from certain types of demographics more, I would say that maybe I would prefer the jury management thing. And look, we can go back to talking about Sarah's knees and pigeons and the fun stuff, but I just wanted to use this opportunity to very much point out that it's interesting that the front runners, the assumed front runners, are all straight white men. So.
No, yeah. And I think it's a very valid point. Like, you know, you ask the question, like, which would I find easier to manage? But the answer to the question of like, which one I prefer, would definitely be the jury, right? Not only from a viewer's perspective, but also I do think, as you mentioned, from a fairness perspective, because I like, obviously not everybody has an equal opportunity to play to the producers in the same way. Not everyone was cast to be the lead character on the season. And they will generally tend to follow those patterns, especially it seems in Australia. And you know, that doesn't mean that there's not a disadvantage for the jury with the regular situation that it is. But I do think it's probably a more manageable situation than relying on an audience vote, especially when you see these, you know, even in the U.S., like America's Favorite Player has been a male, pretty consistently more, especially in recent years, than a woman.
Before Nicole won it, what? It was Alyssa, and that was like 5 years ago or something. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like guy. Because even for BB20, when Haley was in the, she was like in the top three, that was like a big deal, because it's like, oh my God, it's a woman, finally. I just think, look, there's a lot of discussion happening right now, like online regarding BB22. like in terms of who's going to come back and discussions about, oh, so like if say like Big Jeff can make comments about like Dumbledore and like BB13, and he was like literally allowed to be like the host, right? Of, you know, hosting after shows and interviews and whatnot. But then Kalia probably will like never get called back, even though she's the one who called him out. Like, I think these things are interesting, like interesting discussions to have right now, because it's, you know, it's both Pride Month. There's everything happening regarding Black Lives Matter. I think this is, people are the most willing to listen to this type of thing, even on a silly Big Brother Australia podcast. Yeah. Which is why Angela is just, I just love her so much, because we both acknowledge that the producers are trying to like make, depict Matt and the alphas, the good people, as the underdogs. But guess what the recent audience polling said? Yeah, Dan, Chad, Sophie, and Matt are all high up, but guess who's still up there? Angelicious.
Is she on top?
Yep, she's pretty much on one or two. Like, she's still the fan favorite, no matter how hard people try.
Who's putting anybody above Angela at this point?
We're also talking about a country where the last time a woman won Big Brother Australia was 10 years ago, and that there were 5 seasons in a row where what, a woman didn't beat a man. So, but yeah, Angelicious, I think she's just an amazing, and I'm really glad that she's on this show, and she's one of the reasons why I'm still watching, because she just defies expectation, right? You think she's going to be one thing, but nope, she's fishing, like she's smuggling tea bags in her bra, she's pulling lip gloss and applying to her lips, she's putting 2 tea bags in her tea while she's asking production to triple tan a house guest. She's you know, just, I just love her, because she, I feel like, is a the bona fide, like triple, like that perfect intersection of, she's, I would say she's a good player. I think so. She's not a great clip player, but I do think she's trying. Mm-hmm. She's a good player, good character, and just likable human beings. Like, good person. And just, I don't know, it's just, speaking as a person of color in Australia, it's very rare to have a Black woman on TV, let alone someone who's like the hero, no matter how hard production is trying. And it's just, I think we should all celebrate in this moment, because, I don't know if you heard the news, but Big Brother Australia, it looks like it's going to be renewed. It's getting good ratings. Yeah. And I would say, you know, raise your teacups to Angelicious. You know, we should, you know, representation matters. And it's so refreshing to me to see like a person of color is unapologetically herself. And you know what? Like, yeah, the twist helped her. I will not take that away from her. She should not have gotten the live feeds, but. You know what? If it happened, had to happen to someone, I'm glad it happened to her. You know?
I'm the first to complain about the twists, but when the gameplay is on the level that it is, when the gameplay is the best players in the house are making some of the worst moves I've ever seen in Big Brother history, it's whatever. I'm not going to get up in arms about advantages, or it's like, there is no Mitch Moffitt whose game is being ruined by Angela watching live.
Dan could be a Mitch Moffitt, right? Your Dan Moffitt? No, even saying that sentence made me cringe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mitch. But yeah, that's just a segue, because I want to talk about the metagame. That's all. Oh,
yes.
Last thing I'll say about that Shane segment is that, thank you, Shane. Thank you for being the first person to use BB terminology correctly. Guess what he says? He says, it's eat or be eaten. You don't want to be known for floating or coasting. Thank you. Thank you. After swing vote and bait and just nominator instead of HOH, it was just, look, it was a blink and you'll miss a moment. It was like very quick, but I don't even know if he meant it intentionally, but the fact that I heard the word coaster and floater, and it was used in the right context.
Well, look, there's nothing wrong with being a floater. You can be known for being a floater. No, that's
like,
fine.
But the fact that he knew the terminology, like, that's the level of gameplay we're dealing with, where we are commending people for using words correctly.
Yeah. Thank you. So we have a task in this episode, and the task is that there are rain clouds in the backyard, and they're going to have to collect water and put it in a tube, and they get a certain amount of money depending on how much they fill the tube with water. And yet again, I am just astounded at the strategy implemented for like 4 rounds of this. They are still cupping water in their hands and walking it over to the tube finally, after like five rounds, they realize we should all just be gathering it in our clothes. That's a considerably larger amount of water. I was just like, I couldn't believe my eyes that I was watching them cup water in their hands for so long. I just don't understand what's happening.
They have hats. They have hats. The worst part is Hannah and Dia. She's saying it's so hard to collect water without a bucket. She says that while she is literally holding a hat. Why are you trying to cup the water when Shaney's wearing a hat? Xavier has a sombrero. Remember the giant like hat that Garth had to shield him with? They have hats. They have clothes. I do not understand. Like it's like. Where does the dial stop in the head? You know what
where
I mean?
Do they find these people?
Broken Hill, apparently.
Oh man! All right. So that's one part of the task. But then there's also a secret task underneath the task. And again, the housemates should be paying attention to who's being called into the diary room to get these tasks. Who's being tasked to do tasks often? Because Daniel is clearly a big favorite of them. Even before he makes it far, which he probably will. And he's the one that gets this task. But he involves the whole house. They need to get Chad to run 12 kilometers. He has a hidden pedometer in his microphone belt. And so they get Chad. It's a big exercise thing. I enjoyed this. I thought this was pretty funny.
Well, firstly, I will translate for the Americans in the audience. 12 kilometers is 7 miles. Just
yeah.
Doing that because you guys have some really weird mathematical systems like miles and pounds. And I don't even want to know what Fahrenheit is.
Well, like,
I believe America is the only country in the world.
Weirdly, like when it comes to running, we usually, or at least we do use kilometers often. Like you run like a 5K, you know, like, so.
But then if you get in a car, unless Kieran's there, it's suddenly miles again.
Yes, very much so.
It's very odd. Like I even noticed that when people are talking about heights, it's like, oh, it's like inches and like, you know, or whatever the other thing is, inches and I forgot feet. Sorry, thank you. Feet and inches. But then when we're talking about rulers, like I have a ruler and it says it in it's centimeters. It just just metric system, imperial system. The point is that it's a long, long, long amount of like running. 7 kilometers, yeah. 7 miles, 7 miles, 12 kilometers.
In a tiny little house like that, that's pretty difficult.
Yeah. And we will talk about how it was all for nothing.
Yes. So they get this big workout going. Chad is like fully bought in. And then at the end of the day, they've done a ton of running and Sophie decides not enough. I need to get Chad to pace back and forth for a little while to get the steps up. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to get him upset. I'm going to upset him and then he'll start pacing back and forth because he's upset. And so she has this terrible acting job. She goes, I need to talk in the green room. And like, what's the matter? I just need to talk. And she's like walking him around the house like, oh, no, not here. Over here. No, no, not here. Over here. Like, this is going to move the needle. And she eventually gets him in the bedroom. He's like, what is going on? She's like, I'm just trying to get your step count up.
And I'm just like, God.
What? What are you thinking? Why do you say that?
But this is part of the course of BB Australia, right? And that, keep in mind, her logic was, if I argue with him, maybe he'll pace. Like, I don't know about you, but I don't, like, start running around in a circle when I'm mad. Like, I don't, like... What kind of logic is that? That, oh, if I want him to run more, I should like yell at him.
It's insanity. These people, they just confuse me so much. There's just no sense of basic logic or rationality to anything they do.
You know what it is? It's like there's like a, you know how in the first season of Survivor, they had a conch. And if you have the conch, you can talk. On this season, first season of Big Brother Australia, they have an idiot ball. Whoever is holding the idiot ball is like, it's like their turn to be the stupid person who's irrational in the episode.
And so.
Before this episode, it was like Shane who's like, I gotta go get Garth out. And then Shane's like, oh, I woke up. Here's Sophie, catch.
Yeah.
They're going to toss it around like hot potato.
And so they tell them, look, here's what happened. You completed the task. Chad ran like 16 kilometers or something.
14, yeah.
14 kilometers. And, but there's a problem because Sophie told him that she was trying to get his step take up. And so you will not be getting the extra $50 for your food. And Sophie throws a fit that she is going to stomp into the diary room. Can I speak to your manager, please? That this is not right. I was making a joke. I was referring to your regular step take. It had nothing to do with the step take of the challenge. This is not right. This should not happen. I demand our $50.
Excuse me, you served me a hare with a salad around it at this Applebee's. I'd like you to return this, please. Can I speak to the manager? My name is Karen. It was very it's pretty odd. I didn't know what the editors were trying to tell us other than the fact that Chad and Sophie are in the season and that they're close and that Chad has that omniscient line, I'm going right to the end of Sophie, which is just a winner's quote, let's be honest. But other than that, I really did not know why they included this. It was just very weird.
Again, with these people, just like this was really not flattering. This whole tantrum situation, because then she's like, then she like stomps into the house and like she makes it all about her and like everybody should be comforting her. The fact that she screwed up, it was just like, oh boy.
But then again, it wouldn't be Big Brother unless we have some sort of insane showmance drama for Taryn to unpack and not understand.
Oh, of course.
It's like, wait, Nick was with Bella and then suddenly he's with Kat? I don't know what the heck is going on here. It's like, what are you people even arguing about? It's Taco Tuesday? What?
Yeah.
Just what I will say, though, is that the one strategically relevant part about the Chad and Sophie segment, other than the fact that Chad spells out that him and Sophie are going to go to the end together in his mind, Angela was not very happy with Sophie. Mm-hmm. She was not. And I think that has some bearing on the final vote. So this is a good segue, I guess, to talk about the person we actually want to hear about, Angela.
Yes. So this is, Angela, you mentioned to me, before the podcast started that, with this money, Angela did manage to get some of, what she wanted, right?
Not one, but two packets of English breakfast tea.
They needed to make up for last week. She needed two.
No, it's a turnaround is fair trade.
Yeah.
What goes around comes around. Oh, on Zoe's eviction episode too. It's just karma. It's like, and some of the other items on that shopping list, they were just so funny. They say so much about the insanity of this cast, like pre-shredded cheese is one of them, which is just so specific. And if you also look at the pantry items,
hold on, Andrew. Yeah. They need pre-shredded cheese. Do you not have you no sympathy for the fear of grating cheese?
I mean, is it worse than drinking four cups of coffee? I don't know. Like, they're wasting away, right? You know, maybe Grumpy Cat can't shred all that cheese by herself. She needs a pre-shredded. I just love, though, that the producers had to specify in brackets pre-shredded. Like, make it a point. It's like, because in Australia, pre-shredded cheese is on average 1.5 times more expensive than normal cheese. So you have to keep in mind, these people were freaking out about Chad not being able to get, what was it, $50 to $100 on the budget, but they are happy to splurge out on pre-shredded cheese because Casey is freaked out by shredding it.
All right. Well, so yes, Angela and Marissa also talk about Sophie, and they, you know, they talk about, you know, Matt comes in and they're talking to him.
Did you talk about why Angela says she's friends with Marissa, though? I love the justification.
Why she's friends with Marissa?
Yeah. The quote is, Marissa and I, we were friends since day one. It's because we hate the same people. We just strategize and we hate the same people, yeah. Which is the most BB Twitter thing I've ever heard. And Angela then says, secretly, Marissa and I are the queens of this house. We hate the same ones. And in my notes, I wrote, oh, Angela and Marissa are just, they are just on the top of the BB Twitter fan, like, yes, queen, like, totem pole. Especially Marissa after this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, Matt approaches that man.
Yeah.
They're not happy with Sophie. And look, let's give credit to Matt. Matt knows that he, maybe because he overheard on his spy nest that his name's being thrown around, he approaches Angela and Marissa and says, hey, would you like to like have a deal, essentially? Like, especially because Angela was not happy with Sophie, which is something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. So we get to the nomination challenge, and again, it's going to be another like balance thing here that they're placing balls on a little track, and the sort of like weird twist to this one is that they're like they're using their foot as like the balance thing, and it's a very strange looking contraption here.
You ought to get a one step ahead of your competition, right? You got to get a foothold in. But but when it comes to the feet nature of this challenge, I actually thought this was yet again another interesting, innovative challenge. We've seen ball challenges on Survivor before, but attaching a balancing lever, it feels very BB. And I'll say it, BB Australia having the same, I think, production team as Survivor Australia. I think it shows because Australian Survivor has had some flack for not having a lot of mental competitions or memory competitions, but the physical ones that they do have, I think, are pretty interesting in design. And we, you know, for example, Australian Survivor Season 2 came up with that infamous peg challenge. Remember with Peter and Tessa and Michelle on the wall with the pegs, the way you have to remove the pegs one at a time. And guess where that challenge showed up 2 years later in Big Brother Canada 6 in the infamous final five veto that Will Kenny threw. So I like the storyline of Australian reality TV social strategy games coming up with new challenges.
Yeah, I do like the challenges. I think we could see a little more variety. We saw like three balance ones in a row. In fact, there's been a lot of balance ones, I think, in general. And we're seeing, you know, because of the lack of variety, we're seeing the same people tend to win over and over. I'm fine. I think just in general, like there were two endurance ones right in a row, which that Angela won. There's a couple balance ones in a row that Zoe won. So I think if there was something to improve, it would just be variety. But I think overall, like the build quality and the clever parts of them make up for it.
I do have worries, though, about the lack of variety, specifically the lack of like a mental comp or a quiz comp or one of those comps, because if we look at the vote total later on and the people who are the most well insulated, they're the ones who I think will suffer, like who are the least able to do a mental comp. Like I can't see Matt or Dan like acing a quiz comp or like a before or after days comp, right?
Exactly.
And I think the lack of variety of comps coupled with the meta game favoring like the straight white men who are like very burly, I think it ultimately just, I think, adds to the already like disproportionate win equity that some of these people have.
And yeah, so far, I think that it's basically been nearly impossible for Kieran to win almost any. Like he came close on the one of the balance ones with Matt, but for the most part here, like Kieran, who just is basically like not very coordinated and is gonna have like trouble with that sort of hand coordination kind of thing, is gonna struggle with any sort of like overtly physical thing, like he's just not gonna win any of these challenges, and I think that's a failure.
I will say for the producers, I don't think they're necessarily listening to this, but if you are, I have some suggestions regarding the competitions. One, more variety. You need a mental comp in there. So someone like Kieran has a chance. It can be something as simple as like Sonia saying before or after, blah, 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 a day's comp. Two, I think we have a little too many like dual HOH challenges. The Sarah has won two already, but the two that she won was one. She won a challenge with Talia and then another one with Zoe. I am okay with dual HOHs, but I don't think they should be happening like this often. So I would say scale back those. And the last point I would make is just use the US format of the outgoing HOH can't compete in the next one, because these people are stupid and they won't throw a challenge even if they know they should. So you should just make everyone's lives easier. And if you want to keep your big characters who are going to win those challenges earlier on, if you want those people to stay around, then don't let them win two in a row and get out in a row. You know what I mean? Like, or else you're going to end up with yet another season where KC and Xavier go further than, say, Talia or Angela, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, those are my three take-home messages. More mental comps, less dual HOH comps, and let the outgoing HOH not be eligible to compete.
Yes. And so we see Marissa is going to win this competition. Again, incredibly strong performances in the challenges from Marissa overall. She's finally going to win one here. And that means that Janelle she's going to have the power to nominate. And she decides she knows what she's doing. And she nominates three people from the same alliance, like all of which she'd be fine seeing leave.
Marissa Piazzino, I told you, didn't I? She's on the Janelle trajectory, especially the fact that she just nominates the three. And notice how Zoe was bawling her eyes out when she nominated like Dan in episode 8. Marissa's not even shedding a tear. She's like, yep, I nominated three people. I really don't care. And it's like, thank you. First time in like what? I think I want to say three episodes that somebody just nominated three people from the same side. It's like, yep, here are the three. I don't care.
Yeah, finally. So then the episode turns into this idea that that Shane has been pitching against Matt, and he is trying to get the numbers to make this move happen. And he gets his group on board that they are willing to go against Matt. They're all convinced that Matt is the threat. Matt is the danger. But Zoe did just win two competitions in a row. And so Angela kind of feels I'm not sure. I feel like Zoe is the easy vote. Kieran feels very confident that it's going to be Zoe. Of course, the alpha group is all deciding to choose the guys over Zoe. Zoe was the later addition to their group. There's a core of the guys that have been together from the start. And so they are going to be protecting that.
Why are we hearing about this core four for the first time in episode 9? Shouldn't we have not gotten this information earlier? Like, I know that last week I kind of had to be like a live feed correspondent and piece together to like tell you that, yes, Xavier and Casey are working together and they're like very in tight. But we shouldn't have to be doing the Nancy Drew investigation ourselves. Mm-hmm. If there's a core four, either give us the live feeds so we can figure it out easily, or just tell us earlier. It's not, I don't think it's good storytelling to just tell us in episode 9, we had a core four from the start and Zoe came in as a fifth. Like, so does that mean Talia was not even in like the main alliance? Like,
right.
So there's a core four, Zoe's five and Talia was six. So maybe Talia shouldn't have gone at that point.
I will also say oftentimes people like misrepresent this too. Like this could be a lie for all we know. And it might not even be an intentional lie. People often tell the story of the creation of their alliance in a way that is very retroactive and not necessarily true to what happened. So just because he says this doesn't even necessarily mean that it's true.
I agree. I do think though that there is a kernel of truth that is undeniable. The specific kernel being that I do think Dan, Xavier and Matt, those three guys have some sort of deal going on that goes way, way, way back. It must be like a bro code type thing. Just from the name, the way that Shane threw out those three names, just like as if it's like those three names just come belong together. The fact that those three are also in the core four, and the only reason Casey was almost kind of included was Xavier, as we said earlier, was like stumping for Casey. I do think that we can talk about it later, that it wasn't the right move to take Zoe out, because Talia won two HOHs, you take her out. Zoe wins two HOHs, you take her out. in your Alliance podcast, right, you talked about how Maggie in Big Brother 6 had that onion concept where she was okay with letting the outer layers of her onion get peeled off because she had her people who she knew were loyal to her, right? And I think in retrospect, it sounds like Dan and Matt just instinctively have each other's backs. And I think it was a mistake to let Zoe go in this place in that she was clearly on the bottom, you know? And yes, Zoe is not exactly the most strategically savvy, but the deeper we go into the game when numbers begin to dwindle and the number of people competing in these competitions begin to dwindle, I think a very strong alliance of three is dangerous to like keep around, especially when, so Dan has been on the block, what, twice now? Matt has been on the block like at least once. It just boggles my mind that they're not taking the shot, you know? Because do you notice that in the Chad Dan secret task? That what? How does Dan convince Chad to raise his step count? He convinces the boys, Matt, Chad, Xavier, and Shane, to go running and to like to do like an exercise class. To me, this reminded me a little of Will Kirby convincing the house to go on a hunger strike. Look, I don't think Dan is as talented as Will. But the fact that he has this sway over the boys, over the house in particular, like he has a very strong pull on like Ian, Matt, Chad, Xavier, Shane, like there he knows how to talk bro, basically. Mm-hmm. And Matt is one of his wingmen. And it just, I think that in, if we piece all of this information together, especially since Angela was in the bunker and knows all of this, shouldn't she, I think, be at least more wary of the fact that there's a guy thing going on? Even in episode 8, she tells Sarah and Hannah, I'm a bit worried about the guys getting together, potentially. So, just something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah.
Dan's missed.
Well, it seems like ultimately this whole vote is going to come down to can they convince Kieran to side with them and vote Matt out of the game. I mean, I guess you could also say like could they have gotten Angela as well?
It was a mess. 6-6-5-1. We can talk about it. That was a mess.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the vote because I don't know if there's a lot else to talk about here in terms of the campaigning.
We can talk very quickly about Zoe's lack of campaigning because I just found it so, like, so we have in the DR, Zoe said, I hope my squad has my back. And we evenly spread the votes. And immediately the camera cuts to Dan saying, we had a call for from the start. She came in as a fifth. And then Zoe, we cut back to her saying, I know I can trust my squad. I just hope this is not a blindside type of thing. And it's happening behind my back. Mm-hmm. It was just, you remember when Maggie got more votes from the friendship than Cappy did?
Yeah.
It's like Zoe is so loyal to her people and they really don't give a hoot. They just want to cut her out and move on. And don't you think that someone like that is, yeah, she's not exactly savvy, but wouldn't you want to keep her? Because she doesn't know what she's doing. And from her exit interviews, I don't know if you have access to them, she is very salty against those boys. Like, she is very angry. Because well, she thinks she, yeah.
I will say, I think if they had kept her, I think she would have been blindly loyal as she was previously. And I think that, you know, to this point, she was more capable in challenges and she did seem very firmly like on there. I mean, she was crying about putting Dan up because she was so worried that he might get sent out. Like,
but then you know, if she finds out Dan was happy to vote her out.
But that's what I'm saying. If they didn't vote her out, then she would never have found out, right? Because they protected her.
But then, like, it would have been, I think the most ideal move is say that it's still a 6-5-1 vote, right? But it's in the other direction where Zoe stays, but all the votes she got were from the office.
If they had been able to split the vote and keep Zoe, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying about is that I think the, cause keep in mind, the five people who voted for, Matt to go, like, they were all the middle vote people. So it came very close. And all I'm saying though is that Angela and Kieran, if they just voted for Matt, Zoe would have stayed and all the votes that Zoe got would have only been from her former alliance. She is so salty in her interviews. She is saltier than the ocean. She's saltier than the Red Sea. She was like, she's not a happy camper.
I'm fully with you. I mean, Angela and Kieran should absolutely have gotten on board with this. If they both put their votes there, it's a 7-5 vote.
It would have been.
So Yeah, that would have been, and they would have been able to pull Zoe onto their side, basically, I would imagine. And now they have, the comp threat Zoe on their side, pissed off at the other side. So.
Because there is nothing wrong. There is nothing worse than trying to take a shot at a person and then that person staying.
Yeah, which is why, like, this was really bad for these middle players because they did take that shot and they missed. And now Matt knows they want him out.
Well, I think that's why it's crazy. And that Shane, he pulled those people into the green room, like, what? It was 15 minutes before the eviction. It was very, like, last minute. And I want to give kudos to Shane. I think he knew in his head that he said, okay, we have to make a move. And he pulled in the people who he thought, like, were, like, the key votes, right? Because in an ideal world, like, the people who are the hardest to sway are, like, Chad and Sophie. I don't think Shane realized that Angela and Kieran would flip like that. Because keep in mind, Hannah voted with the middle group. Mm-hmm. So the vote was, like, meant to be a blindside of Matt. So all the pieces were in play for Zoe to be blindsided with the number of votes she got from her own alliance, her squad, who doesn't give a hoot about her, and to blindside her into staying, kind of like what BB, like 21 did with Nicole versus Cliff. But it's just so frustrating to me in that all the pieces were there, but then they
I will say.
Sarah's in the room. She's in the green room and she votes for Xavier. So if Sarah votes for Matt, then it would have been a 6-6 vote and Marissa would have broken the tie. So I just don't understand some of the logic. It's like they are making good moves, but then they also make bad moves. And because the alpha group failed the least, somehow they are in the best position when I don't think they played the best because they were going to get blindsided like they were. But then somehow they just stumbled into the correct thing. I don't know. What do you think?
I will say, like, from the perspective of somebody like Kieran or somebody like Angela, you know, yes, you can pull Zoe to your side. But what is your side? Are they really with this middle group? Because if they are able to do what I said the middle group should have done last time, that should have been their motivation last time, and essentially side with the alphas in order to perpetuate an alpha versus middle group war, then all of a sudden, Kieran and Angela get to sit back, watch these two forces duke it out, and don't have to worry about being targeted themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, again, not to say that that was their motivation, because it probably was not, but I do think it puts Angela and Kieran in an okay spot moving forward. Sarah, I have no idea.
Well, I think the one possible rebuttal about Angela and Kieran's motivations is that Hannah, they were essentially leaving Hannah and Sarah out to dry because Hannah voted with the middle group. Hannah's voting confessional makes it sound like she thought that was the vote. And the voting confessionals we can talk about later, but it sounds very much like it was a last minute decision because Kieran was, Shane approached Kieran, remember? So Kieran earlier on was saying, I think it's going to be Zoe. I don't want to target Xavier or Matt because they're the strongest people in the house. To make a move against them would be stupid, stupid, stupid. I want to work with the alphas. Side note, why are we calling them the alphas? That is such a weird name for an alliance.
Yeah.
I prefer the good people, but alpha is just so machismo and machopy that it just hurts my brain.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the official name, right? The alphas. Okay.
It seems to be.
So the alphas. So, but then at the last 5 minutes beforehand, Chad and Shane go to Kieran and say, hey, trust me, we have the votes. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. And from the voting confessional logic, it sounds like Kieran and Angela didn't go with it because they didn't think the numbers were there, which is so heartbreaking. It's like, so you didn't trust Chad and Shane who came to you last minute and told you about like the votes are flipped. Do it, do it, do it. And the only reason why you went with the alphas is because you didn't think they were going to do it. So essentially, mm-hmm. Nobody won and the alphas won. And I mean, we can talk about it later, but Hannah and Sarah are not happy. They're not. Because from their perspective, remember, the ladies are working together, right? Angela, Marissa, Hannah, and Sarah. Because the four of them, even in the episode, Angela says, our alliance survives. Like the four of them have a deal. So why would you keep two of your own allies in the dark? I get not telling the middle group about it, but surely there was time to like pull Hannah to the side and say, hey, the vote's changing. Like, because from Hannah's perspective, it's, oh, so you knew the vote was going to change. And then you let me vote with the minorities. So I'm screwed. Mm-hmm. You hear what I'm saying? It's like, I don't like, I think this is essentially a position where they did what Garth is doing, where they're going to get all of the heat for what's happened. And they are burning, not only the swing votes, but also the allies that they actually had. Like, we can talk about Sarah's lack of logic, but it sounds like Sarah voted for Xavier as a throwaway because Sarah thought Matt was going home. So even Sarah was blindsided.
Oh boy.
It's like, it's such like a, do you hear what I'm saying? If I think if Angela and Kieran were intending to like, put the middle group people in danger and to like really continue like shift the focus of the war, then it's a good move. But then if you're going to shift the focus of the war, shouldn't you warn your own allies like Hannah mm-hmm. and Sarah about it? I don't know. No, let's talk about the vote, I guess.
Any other stuff from the voting confessional? Because what, as we said, what we end up seeing is a 6-5-1 vote, which is just absurd. So any other information we have from the confessionals here?
I think, well, before we talk about the confessionals, because they all have a theme. The theme is Broken Hill. So I think we need to talk about Broken Hill and like me explain what Broken Hill is. So Taryn, what do you think Broken Hill is? Because I'm sure you've heard it so many times that Matt is sounding like a broken record.
I mean, it sounds hill. like a so a small town that that's like a good place.
You know how people on Tinder sometimes put their height as a personality trait? To me, saying you're from Broken Hill is not a personality trait, but it's just all of the, a lot of the voting confessionals, like it was like very much this thing of Matt is from Broken Hill, so he's going to win the game if he gets to the end, which is so bizarre to me because Broken Hill has it's a small mining town in New South Wales, but you don't hear in Big Brother US of people saying, oh my God, Donnie is from like, I don't know, somewhere in the south, though he's going to win if he gets to the end. You know what I mean?
Like, well, you do hear it on Big Brother Canada. Like hometown actually is a thing, especially when it comes to like the vote, the public vote. Like people often talk about like, oh, well, they're from this place and then they're going to get a lot of support from this place. And so, you know, it's not super out of left field for me.
Yeah, it's just, look, maybe I should like, if I ever want to get one ever plan on being on one of these shows, go to Broken Hill and say I'm from there so I get popular as well. But yeah, the one vote from Sarah says that she's Sarah to Xavier. I think he's an absolute mastermind in this game, and it sounds like she was throwing her vote essentially. Matt's five votes were Shane, Hannah, Zoe, Chad, and Sophie. All of the middle group people, in fact, all of the people except Zoe have basically said some version of he's the most popular person in the house. If he gets to the end, he's going to win. The Australian public will vote for him. There's a blind side coming. So essentially those, like minus Zoe, the people who are voting Matt, they're under the assumption that, oh boy, here we go.
They think they get have one it. Of them.
Yeah. Which
oh
is,
boy.
Yeah.
Well, clearly and otherwise then, they wouldn't have voted that way.
Yeah, and the six votes from Zoe were Dan, Angela, Kieran, Xavier, and Casey. Now, I think the Dan confessional is important to mention because he says it's a strategic vote to save Matt. I love Zoe, but I have to do this too. I have to do this because I have a feeling Shane, Chad, and Sophie are planning to get Matt. So I'm going to give Dan some credit here. So we see in the episode that Dan, he walks past the green room, right? And it sounds like he overheard something. Sounds like Dan... either before Chad and Shane pulled Kieran aside or like right after, he just like jumped onto Kieran and said, hey, like, let's make a deal. Don't do this, blah, 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 blah. And like, cause if once we get to Kieran and Angela's confessionals, it becomes more palpable that it was very much a Dan scrambling to combat a scramble. And I think we have to give credit where credit is due. To be able to like react that quickly, it's very like a.
So what did they? Yeah. What did they say? What did they say? What did Kieran and Angela say? Because it's like my first instinct was, oh, I wonder if Kieran ratted them out to Dan.
Kieran's rationale is that he gives a number of them. One of them is that she's the biggest threat to me. Another one is I don't think we have the numbers. And another one is I don't feel comfortable taking a shot against the alphas yet. So, and like, and then Angela's one is more, I think, telling where she says, I'm only doing this out of loyalty to Marissa. And, through thick and thin, she's my number one ally and I want to see her happy. And Marissa has gone on like, the social medias to imply that, like basically, we now know at this point, right, that Marissa, Angela, and Kieran had some sort of day one deal. So they are a three, I would say, even though Kieran is so flippy floppy. It sounds very much like Angela didn't want to do this, but she did it for Kieran and Marissa, who got spooked. Because it sounds like Dan approached them and that either some information was shared or they were intimidated enough so that that's where the vote went. Because keep in mind, if Marissa has also flipped, then it doesn't matter if Angela forces a tie because Marissa will just break it, right? And send Zoe home.
We assume.
Yeah, well, assume. So it sounds very much like Dan, like he did a good job. He hustled at the last minute. And we don't need to talk about, you know, the Xavier and Casey and like all of them, because it's like the same thing of I want to keep Matt in. And Zoe's confessional was funny though, where she said, she's crying and she's saying, he's a threat. I have to do this because I have no choice. And it's just so funny because she's just, oh my God, she was just a hot mess during the entire tribal council. And I love that her last words were, I can't believe Kieran is staying longer than me. That's like the last thing she wants to leave.
Yeah. Oh boy. So this is the last we'll see of Zoe. Bitter to the last moment. And that's it for a week.
Don't you think Zoe would have been funny on a jury though?
I mean, she would have been angry. That's for sure.
She would have been angry for sure. And before we wrap up, we have just a few questions, not a lot, less than last time. So the first, would you like to help me answer some of these, Taryn?
Sure.
They're from. So RHAP patron David Healy, he asked, Sophie didn't explicitly reveal that there was a challenge for Chad to earn money in the house. Do you think this disqualification was merited? Or do you think it was more the producers doing it for a storyline?
100% merited. She came out and said explicitly, we need to get your step count out. Even if she was talking about something different, the fact that she says that to him should 100% disqualify the challenge. I liked that they mm-hmm. disqualified them because, you know, in Big Brother Canada, when they have challenges like this, it's obvious to everyone what's going on and they don't disqualify them. I think they have to be very strict about it. Otherwise it just becomes a joke. And so I liked that, that this was the case. And I think that they made the right call.
Somewhere in the back of my head, I can hear like Emmett from Big Brother Canada saying, hey, disqualifications do happen in Canadian challenges.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I also agree with David. I think it's a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. I do think the disqualification was merited, but I also do think the producers knew that it was going to get them good Chad and Sophie content. And if we're buying into the theory that they're going far, then, you know, why not show that? You know what I mean? Especially in a pre-taped version. So,
mm-hmm.
Another question is from @RoboJosh9000. Do you think the housemates, their time would have been better spent focusing on collecting the water instead of working out in terms of the strategy for the in-house task?
I don't think they have to choose. I mean, the water wasn't happening all the time. So, in the time when they're not collecting water, they can be working out. And then when the water starts, they start collecting water. If for some reason they didn't have the mental capacity to understand that they should be collecting water in their clothes instead of their hands because they were too busy working out, then maybe, but that shouldn't be a restriction there.
Fair point. I guess like I'm still irate about the water thing because they had caps and they had clothes and it just frustrates me that they kept using their hands. I feel like that's a metaphor for the season. All the house
very
sticks
much
are
so.
They're just leaking through their fingers. We have a question from @Chris Christo. There's a question. This is actually a good one. It's for you. So he says Matt Speaks is the most Australian. We haven't heard somebody that Australian since Tim Dormer mentioned gummy koalas on BB Canada 4. Can Taryn answer the following, try to identify which of these Australian sayings are actual sayings and what do they mean?
Oh,
so he has three words from that Matt himself actually said. So it's a small game. I'm just going to give you three like terms, like Australianisms that Matt said in the episode, and try and see what you think they mean. It's a fun game.
All right.
So Matt, he says, I'll give you some budgie smuggler with a hint of dad bod with a bald head. What do you think a budgie smuggler is?
Wow. Can I have a multiple choice here?
A, is budgie smuggler a type of bird? Or B, is it a type of swimwear? C, is it a type of underwear?
I'm gonna say C.
Underwear.
Yes.
It's a Speedo.
Oh.
And don't ask me why it's called the budgie smuggler. Shapes. Moving on. So he also says, big brother, I've secretly been wanting to get a tan for years, but I haven't had the nuts to do so. Cause I'd cop a bit of curry, but no time like the present. Yes, I'd love a spray tan. Firstly, I feel like Matt needs to come with subtitles because I'm Australian and even I struggled with that sentence. So what do you think cop a bit of curry means?
Oh man, I need some multiple choice again.
Okay, cop a bit of curry means bring up some courage, or B, make things difficult for somebody. So he said, secretly, I've been wanting to get a spray tan for years, but I haven't had the nuts to do so because I'd cop a bit of curry, but no time like the present.
What were the options again?
A, bring up, summon courage, or B, make things difficult for someone.
I mean, I guess A.
Summon courage, incorrect.
What is it? What does it mean? What's the difficulty going to be?
So cop a bit of curry means if you give a bit of curry to someone, it means you've made it difficult for someone. Copying a curry means that it's hard for you. It's Australia. I don't know why curry is like a thing for difficulty. I guess because like maybe curries are spicy and spiced.
It's very strange.
Okay. In Australia, what does the word floater mean? Okay, this is a good one. What's a floater in Australia?
I mean...
Is it A, some Arjun song, or is it B, a meat pie in a floating in a dish of green pea soup?
I'm going to say B.
Correct. 1 out of 3. A floater is a meat pie. And the final one
is... Man, that's gross. That sounds gross to me.
I mean, it's not yogurt. So.
Yeah.
The final one is... Oh, God, this is so Australian. I am one snag short of a Barbie. What does Matt mean when he say, when he says I'm a snag short of a Barbie?
I'm very close.
Keep in mind, these are all words that he used in like this BB Australia. I'm not just pulling these out of nowhere. Like Chris is not pulling these out of nowhere either. So what does Matt mean? This is our future winner potentially. He's a snag short of a Barbie.
He came so close and got so far, but in the end it didn't matter.
Snag short of a Barbie is Australian for not all of the crayons in her box are colorful, or she's a sandwich short of a picnic. It's it means dim-witted.
There you go.
There we go. Congratulations. 1 out of 4. So I guess we're turning into the B&B here now. But I just had to do that because it was an Australian question. I just thought, hey, if you have an Australian here... Maybe you'll feel like getting a floater anytime soon.
Oh boy, yeah.
Oh, the last question, I guess, is where do you think Angela goes from here to win? That's it.
I mean, I think that, you know, if this turns into alphas versus you know middle group, then she can skate by for a while longer and then win some comps in the end and you know be the fan favorite, win the game.
I think she needs to repair that bridge quickly, though, with Hannah and Sarah, because I don't think they're particularly happy. And I think, you know what they say, trust is currency in this game. And if you don't have the currency, you're a dollar short and a day late. So
you're a snag short of a Barbie.
A snag short of the Barbie. That's a hashtag snag short.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us this week on Big Brother Australia and the coverage of it. We'll be back next week to talk about what happens here in the Big Brother Australia house. You can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn Andrew. Where can people find you?
I'm at Andrew W. Shim. So Andrew, like the letter W, Shim, S-H-I-M, for Mary, on Twitter and Instagram. Send me your snag short of a Barbie pics. Send me your Barbies.
Yes. All right. Thanks again. And we will see you next time.